Welcome back to a special Memorial Day episode of LA Confidential. My name is Chauncey Talese, and I am the NFL editor for SportsLW.com, your number one source for LA sports. If you like the Angels, the Dodgers, the Clippers, and Lakers, and who doesn't like the Lakers these days besides Magic? Except for Magic. Please subscribe to Sports Audente. We also cover fantasy, your daily fantasy sports, and pro wrestling. Use a promo code LAPodVidential for 10% off the monthly, yearly, or lifetime packages. On today's show, we have birthday boy Wes Campbell.
How's it going, guys? Thank you.
Yeah, you're Dirty 30.
Yeah, Dirty 30, baby.
We got
spending it doing the podcast.
I know, right? No place you'd rather be.
That's right.
We're going to be talking about some NFL. We have a whole bunch of trailers to talk about. We have the finale of Game of Thrones, which, you know, my wife and the mother of dragons, Allie, will be dropping in on.
There we go.
And then we have a very special interview with Akela Cooper. She's written for The 100, Marvel's Luke Cage, Avengers Assemble. She's a writer of the movie Hellfest, and she's currently writing The Nun 2. We have a really long conversation about her journey through all the various writer's rooms, writing for genre, her time working on American Horror Story. It's a really awesome conversation. But let's start with the NFL. You know, I keep waiting for it to get, like, you know, dark as far as news goes, but God bless the Jets for making things interesting.
Hey, you know what? Like, I feel like the Jets are really trying to make a name for themselves in terms of being dysfunctional.
They're like, oh, the Giants are on our corner now? No. We can be much more dysfunctional than you. Adam Gase had to downplay rumors they're trying to trade Le'Veon Bell, which that's amazing.
I know. You signed him to this big multi-year deal just, what, 2 months ago at this point?
Yeah.
And now your rumors about trading him? Like, who's going to take on that deal?
I mean, who'd want to?
You could say the Colts, because they still have...
They're not going to. They're like, no. Because they could have signed... If they wanted to, they could have signed him.
No, I know, but that's what I'm saying, though. Like, if if we're going to point out teams, like, who can financially do it, you got the Colts, who maybe spent, like, a penny in free agency.
I mean, I guess if, like, the Jets are like, fine, we'll eat, like, a bunch of dead money, then someone will do it. But, like, at this point, like, who cares? Like, no one wants to trade for him. And then the rumors were, like, they were looking at Peyton Manning to come in and run the front office.
Well, you know, he's not doing those Papa John commercials anymore.
So. No, but it's all nationwide.
Oh, I know.
It's him and I think Brad Paisley are doing just touring around the country doing jingles.
Yeah, but no, I was watching NFL Network this morning at the Good Morning America show, and they were talking about the Jets GM job, where I guess they're reaching out to kind of doing like pulling a page from the Raiders, reaching out to like the sports media.
Okay.
About their possible, like, GM vacancy.
It's kind of worked okay in the NBA, David Kahn aside. I mean, John Hollinger's done some good work for the Spurs, but...
Yeah, but I guess there's been... From what one of the analysts said, because he was, I guess, rumored to be, like, contacted by the Jets. I forget which one it was. But... Yeah, that's his big thing, is that he hasn't been contacted, but he's heard that other... media outlets or media representatives might be rumored to that job. So,
oh my lord!
And who's to say that they brought up a good segment where it's like, what's going to happen first? The Jets hire a GM, or they play their first preseason game?
Oh boy, they can't let it go into the summer. I mean, I know it's not that important because the draft and free agency are already done. But then again, like, you need someone to like make all those moves on the margins, like the like the Eagles do every year.
Yep, or you know, right when training camp ends,
who makes the cuts and settling the final roster, seeing like, okay, well, can we trade? Can we make any trades? Can we pick up anybody?
Yep,
you need someone to do that. TikTok New York, Jesus. let's see. The NFL also announced that the Combine is going to be in primetime starting the next year. Because who doesn't want to watch people running cones and shit on primetime TV?
Woo!
I know. You know what's sad? And it really bums me out. But that's the problem this world has. Like, that'll outrate, like, an NBA playoff game. Like, a round one playoff game. That it's just watching, like, big dudes work out.
Yeah, I can, like, I can see that.
Come on, man.
Yeah, I mean... When I worked at my previous job, we had three TVs set up, one for kids, one for sports, and one for, like, news, like CNN.
Sure.
And around NFL scouting time, like, I had to sit there and really try and search for anything else other than the scouting combine, because no one wants to watch that.
No, and, like, it's cool when you see, like, a 30-second cut of, like, people doing 40s and stuff. I mean, but that's, like,
all you need, though.
Right. Well, it's, like, cool. Like, they're, you know, the cone drill or the shuttle, fine. Like, I just don't know who's going to tune in yet. I know people will.
Yeah.
Like, if next year's class is, like, any hype to it, you know it's...
Everyone's going to sit there and pay attention to it.
They also announced that the Browns get the draft next year in 2020. No one has 2021, although it could probably be LA, because that's when the facility opens. And then Casey has it in 2022.
I thought it was Vegas in 2020.
Oh, yeah, Vegas in 2020.
And then 21 is Browns.
21 is Cleveland. 22 is vacant, but 23 is KC. Like, one of the years is, like, blank. I think it's 2022, but that's probably going to be L.A.
Yeah.
Because that's when they open the... they'll have the complex open by then.
Yeah.
Which, you know, good for L.A.
Yeah, I mean, they have the Olympics coming and...
Yep, the World Cup.
Yeah, World Cup and, you know, soon the draft.
And the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, like, and the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl in, like, 2024.
God, it's going to suck for traffic.
Well, yeah, but you don't live down there, so...
I know, but...
And you're, right, you know, you don't work down there either.
Exactly.
Like, good for... I guess good for Cleveland. That'll be fun. It'll be, you know, assuming that next year goes okay for them, they won't have to, like, be, like, the number one pick. That's no fun.
Yeah.
They can just kind of, like, chill.
But could you imagine if, with all the star power that they've added this offseason, and they end up getting the number one pick because they
suck? That's not happening. I don't think that's happening. Like, it just seems like...
But how great would that be?
It would be funny.
It would be totally Cleveland.
It would be funny, but, like, I don't think that happens. No, because they were a bigger shit show this year, and they almost went 8-8.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, they were fine. Like, I think John Dorsey won't let it get that bad.
No.
Like, unless people get hurt, which you can't control, but even then, like, they won't be top 10 next year.
Yeah.
They weren't top 10 this year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they had a mid-round.
They had a mid-range.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Wow.
Yeah, no, they can laugh at everyone else's misfortune for once.
Yeah.
OTAs have gotten underway, and as per usual, people get hurt.
Yeah.
Reuben Foster's out for the year. What did he tear, his ACL? Was it his ACL?
Yeah, it was a... ACL or LCL.
Mm-hmm.
Or
someone like broke their collarbone today. I mean, I know OTAs are important. You need them, but it's like, man. Because then the conversation comes, well, do we really need this? Can't they just show up for training camp? It's like, no, they can't, especially if they're rookies.
Yeah, I mean, you got to sit there and put the time in. And
it sucks.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It
sucks.
But it's part of
football. It's a bummer, but...
Part of any sport. It's
I know. And Reuben Foster. Jesus. I don't know if success is a restraining order against him, but it seems like it. Gerald McCoy got cut from the Bucks.
Yeah,
that was huge.
Yeah, I mean they mutually parted ways, and
sure.
I mean it sucks because again he's been fixture of their defense for nine years.
All of their defense, yeah.
Yeah.
But that they replaced him with Ndamukong Suh and allegedly Shaq Barrett, which fine. But Gerald McCoy is meeting with the Browns. He's got the Panthers and Bengals on his radar. If I'm the Colts, I'm putting in a call now because, my God.
I know, right?
Like, that defense can only get better, and they need someone in the middle, and Gerald McCoy would solve that problem.
Exactly.
Like, he's been one of those dudes. He's like what...
like, there's really been no character concerns for him.
No, but, I mean, like, if it wasn't for the Bucks being so terrible, he'd be up in that same class as Aaron Donald and... Oh, what's the guy in the Eagles? Blanking. It's been a long week.
Which one?
Their defensive tackle.
Oh, I hate you right now because I can't think of it. I know it's
like, I know.
Curry.
I feel bad. It's not. No, it's not Curry.
Cox.
What? Yeah.
Cox.
Fletcher Cox.
There we go.
God. It's a holiday weekend. Screw you guys. yeah, Fletcher Cox, Aaron Donald, Gerald McCoy. I know, right? We're both 30. It's over. Like he'd be mentioned in that same breath that he's never had like a relevant playoff moment because the Bucks have been a dumpster fire.
Yeah,
but if he goes to the Browns, holy God! The defense is already.
I know. How much more hype can you get for the Browns?
I know they. I know, right? Well, I don't know why he'd go to the Bengals. It'd just be a lateral move. It'd be like Tampa but colder.
Yeah. like, and probably worse off too.
Oh yeah. Like, if he should just go to the Colts. It's an easy gig.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, their offense is good. Their defense is a lot of really young good players.
Yeah,
and they're on the rise.
I think they retained like 96% of their defensive players last year who took snaps. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm.
like second in the league compared to the Cowboys.
Yeah, and they're in a division that's winnable. They just have to get past Houston, basically.
Yeah. Houston and maybe Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Maybe Jacksonville's frisky with Big Dick Nick, but I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he brought some of that magic to
They don't have any weapons, though.
He'll make weapons, all right? I got to speak for Brian since he's not here.
Yeah, right. There's no Eagles nest this week.
Yeah.
No, but with Sue and Barrett, like, I don't know what that's going to do for Tampa, because Tampa has bigger problems. I mean, good for Sue, I guess, for getting another one-year deal. But I think the days of teams signing him to a long-term deal are over, I'm surprised at.
Yeah, I mean, I know NFL teams are kind of shifting towards that, like, best bang for your buck and everything, but, like...
Well, that's the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, I would have figured that he would have at least gotten, like, maybe a two-year deal.
I know, I was surprised nobody, like, I mean...
Even signed him sooner.
Well, the Colts probably not, because they're, like, really all about culture now, which
surprising.
Is, well, it's what you have to do. It's good to have a strong culture and an infrastructure.
Yeah.
That's why the Patriots have been successful. But, like, I'm surprised, like, the Chiefs didn't try to, or the Niners... Chargers even, but, well, I don't know. Sue's days of getting a huge deal are over, I think, which is weird to think about.
Yeah. Because he's only been in the league for 10 years?
This is his 10th year.
Okay.
Yeah, I think what happened with Miami, like, really soured people. Because it really just seemed like once he signed the deal, he didn't care, which isn't true. The numbers don't bear that out, but that was the perception because the Dolphins were just a train wreck.
Yeah.
And not his fault, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, you got to get work somewhere, right?
We have a quick Cowboy corner to get to.
Yeah, where do you want to start?
Well, Zeke, that's really all I wanted to talk about because... You know, we're at that part of the offseason where, you know, people have too much time on their hands. People go to an EDC show and...
Okay, first off, that wasn't like...
Well, let's explain what happened.
All right, so TMZ released the cell phone video of Zeke at EDC this past weekend.
Now, for our older listeners, because I know we have them now, what's EDC?
What's it, the electronic...
Electric Daisy Land Carnival?
Yeah, whatever. I don't even know what it is, but it's pretty much a big...
My brother and sister-in-law have gone to it.
Yeah.
It's a rave.
Yeah, it's just a big rave
Vegas. Ecstasy and glow sticks and techno music.
Yeah.
God, I'm old. It's not even techno anymore. What do they call it?
I don't know. It's just a bunch of people pressing stuff on a computer. It's not real music.
It's a bunch of trust fund white guys with like Apple computers pressing stuff, making the bass drop.
Yeah. Real musicians here.
They're real musicians. They all have like the same 8 songs in their mix.
Yeah, but they change it up just...
Mm-hmm. Just enough.
Just enough to where they can fill out a
They
CD.
Change the bass and like, hit the fire extinguisher smoke at different times. Yes. But anyway, what happened to Zeke at EDC?
So the video shows him just... walking around, and then I guess later in the video he's sitting there talking to one of the security guards who's leaning up against one of the metal fences, the guard fence, and you can hear him say, "You got something to say, bro," and kind of puts his chest into him, and the guy, you know, lost his balance and fell back, and of course TMZ is going to blow it up saying that he shoved him and all this stuff, and it's like, his hands weren't raised. He didn't push him. Yes, he, bumped it, peacocked and everything and put his chest out. But...
I know. It's a nothing burger, but it just made me laugh because, like, we're at this part of the year.
Yeah, and, I mean, again, this is going back to my point in terms of you're a veteran player and you're essentially in a contract year for you.
Mm-hmm.
You consider yourself in a contract year, but you still... We picked up the 5th-year option on you last month, so you're still with us until after 2020. But you're publicly saying you want to get paid, and yet you do shit like this. Like, what are you thinking, man?
I know. Look, you can go out. No one's saying you can't go out, but, like, no, don't be stupid. Like, yeah, have a buddy.
Exactly. And I guess, like, if you read the report, it's early, like, what wasn't shown is he's sitting there arguing with his girlfriend, and everyone's going to sit there and go, like, oh, great, is he going to have another, like, alleged domestic violence, which never happened. But, again, like, it's just, you know, be smart.
Don't put yourself in that position.
Don't screw this up.
Like, by all means, good EDC, but, like, have a buddy. Even, like, pay one of your friends extra money.
Not even that. Like, you're with the most, like, I don't want to say successful, but, like, in terms, you could say most
successful. You're the biggest franchise in the league. Yeah. They are.
Well, okay, but biggest sports franchise in the world.
Uh-huh.
Like, reach out to your old pal Jerry Jones there and say, hey, I'm going to EDC. Do you think I can borrow some team representatives to, like, walk me around? Like,
I'm sure Jerry would give it to him. And
exactly. Yeah. He doesn't even have to ask. Like, Jerry would have been, I'm sure it was like, yeah, just go follow him around. Just make sure.
I don't know what that is, but okay.
Yeah, I mean.
God. I mean, look, it could have been worse.
Yeah, exactly. It could.
Could have been a lot worse.
Could have been a lot worse. And
I'm sure between now and training camp or preseason, someone is going to do something worse because it's inevitable.
It's the NFL.
It's the NFL. But hopefully, you know, I don't think he'll get disciplined, but it was just kind of like here we go.
No, and I know Jerry came out today.
If it was anyone else, it would have been a biggie, but it's Zeke, so there's already a scarlet letter on him.
Exactly. I know Jerry came out today saying, like, oh, well, I don't expect Zeke to get any discipline from the NFL, but...
Any happier news in Cowboy Corner?
Yeah, I guess, it's always rays of sunshine in Cowboy Corner, because we're the Cowboys. I guess an extension for Dak is going, like, the Cowboys gave a proposal to him, and his Dak and his representatives gave a counter proposal.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're not going to know what the difference is in terms of money, but at least they're, you know, working towards a deal. And again,
he got signed by the training camp. I can just feel it.
Exactly,
it feels like one of those where it's like late June, early July, and it's like like, it'll come, or, like, right, either right before NBA free agency, or, like, right when training camp starts.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I was watching Good Morning Football this morning, and they talked about, you know, who should you pay first, Dak, Zeke, or Amari? And, again, like, you gotta lock up the quarterback.
That's right.
You know, unfortunately, quarterback is the most important position in football.
In all sports, really.
Yeah, and, you know, they're gonna lock up Dak first, and then if I'm the Cowboys, I'm gonna sit there and lock up Amari, because his contract's up after this year, and then you can offer one to Zeke, you know, next offseason, depending on how much cap room we have.
I was gonna say, you gotta do a lot of cap commentary for that one.
Yeah, I mean, but I would go Dak, Amari, then Zeke. If I'm going based off of what they talked about
on
Good Morning Football. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and just because of contract importance.
True. And, you know, they already have, technically already have Zeke, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, they have him for another year.
Exactly.
Like, if he's going to get pissy, then let him get pissy. Yeah. Like, whatever, but, you know, let it play out.
Yeah, and who's to say that, you know, again, they don't work out a deal for Amari mid-season, or...
Yeah, maybe. It seems like a late preseason kind of thing.
Yeah. So, you never know.
As long as, you know, if he doesn't show up to camp, then I'll get worried.
Exactly. And that's what we gotta sit there and worry about.
Now, last little bit of NFL news, on a more somber note, Chris Long announced on Twitter he retired. I'm very sad. This is a personal one for me.
Yeah, he was a good guy.
No,
even though he played for the Eagles.
And the Pats.
And the Pats.
Well, look. But,
yeah, he was a good guy. I like him.
When the Rams are at their shittiest, their absolute worst, Chris Long was one of the few bright spots. They took him number 2 overall, and at the time I was a little annoyed. I wanted Jake Long.
Yeah.
Which, that I was very wrong on that one. Which, because we got Jake Long later, and he was, like, already a shell.
Yeah.
But Chris Long was a beast for his entire run. He got hurt, towards the end. That's why they had to let him go. But, like, My God.
But yeah, I mean, talk about a player who...
And he's a good dude. Yeah. Like, genuinely a good dude. He gave up a salary for an entire year when he was with the Eagles to fund charities all around, all across Philadelphia.
Well, even when he was with the Rams.
He did the homeless thing. He lived homeless for a day to experience it.
Yeah.
And then donated to a lot of causes around St. Louis.
Yeah.
You know, he was a good dude. And I'm glad he got his rings. It's too bad they were with the Pats and the Eagles, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's how the NFL works in terms of...
I know.
In terms of trying to get a ring, you might have to just leave your current team to...
Well, they let him go because he was too expensive.
Yeah.
And they already had Aaron Donald at that point.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
God. And, like, he was already expensive because he was under the old rookie system where you got paid whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, before Sam Bradford broke it.
Yep.
2 years later. But, no, I still rock my Chris Long jersey on game days.
Yeah, I mean, eventually when I get my DeMarcus Ware jersey, I'm going to sit there and rock it.
And, which, I have that one. Which, good on him, yeah. By the way, also for, like, you know, also when he retired, it's like, hey, man, I used to smoke weed, and, like, you talk about all the breaks in their system, and how, like, players should just be allowed to do it. Because, you know, like, I've said on this a million times, I'd rather my players, like, get pain relief through weed than, like, opiates.
Yep.
Because, you know...
I'm a lot more addicted.
Well, it's just easier.
Yeah.
Like, it's better, and it's better.
Exactly.
Like, the NBA, the NBA is coming around on it.
Yeah.
All right, so that's it for the NFL portion. Now we get to move on to the NBA whole portion. So tonight, we're recording this on a rainy Thursday night. The Toronto Raptors are now 3-2 on the Bucks. They went into Milwaukee and beat Giannis.
There we go.
I know, the Warriors already took care of business. I completely forgot to talk to you about this last week with this is how long ago it was. This is like a whole other series ago. But like Amelia Clark, you know, Daenerys Targaryen was at the Rockets game.
Oh, I saw that.
That where they put, instead of Amelia Clark actress Game of Thrones, they put all of her titles, like Mother of Dragons, Breaker of Chains.
Yeah.
And then the Rockets mascot bent the knee, and she was just like laughing her ass off. Sorry, I'd forgotten to bring that up. it feels like a forever ago.
I know.
But the Warriors are in their finals, their fifth straight, which they're the first team since like the 60s Celtics to do five straight finals. And they've done it without Durant.
I know, and...
They won't have him for the finals.
I was going to say, they're not going to have him back at the start of it, right?
Nope. And then, you know, with Toronto, I think they'll probably close it up, but then again, I could just see it going 7, and who knows what happens. I just want basketball Memorial Day. That'd be fun.
Hey, you know what?
But I'm surprised that the Bucks, like, the first two games, they looked dominant. They almost won Game 3, but it went to double overtime, and now the Raptors are a game away. Who would have thunk the Toronto effing Raptors would go to the NBA Finals?
If
they do, it's pretty amazing.
Well, yeah, but they still have to win.
That's the most relevant Toronto moments. And, I mean, the Blue Jays World Series in the 90s, but even then, no one cared. Like, I only remember them because they're a plot point in Big Daddy.
Yeah.
That's the World Series. He and Kevin, they flew up to Buffalo, flew up to Toronto for the night.
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yep. At the Toronto Hooters.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Magic Johnson selfishly blew up the Lakers this week. That was fun. Did you see that?
No, but I'm not surprised.
Their Lakers are like an hour away from like having introducing Frank Vogel as their head coach, and then Magic goes on First Take to talk about all that went wrong. He's like, he was talking about how hard it was for him to do the job. He didn't expect he had to work this much. He gave up his Sunday movie night to his wife.
Oh, man.
It's like, I don't know why they expected me to, like, be in there, like, that many hours a week. And, like, called Rob Pelinka a backstabber, which I believe. I don't, there's no winners here. But it was the whole thing about just, like, what a mess they were. Like, Rob Pelinka was, like, talking shit about Magic on emails and forgot that Magic was still CC'd on the emails.
I just love the fact that he's like, yeah, I didn't expect to, like, come in and work this much as a general manager.
As the president of basketball. I mean, I didn't either. I figured he'd be just, like, the face and just the guy you bring in for meetings, but he wouldn't even do that.
Yeah.
He would be on those vacations for 5 weeks, and they'd probably have meetings and just... Like,
I want to work like that.
There's no winners in this. Pelinka sucks. Jeannie, I don't know what she's doing. And Magic also was just very selfish for doing it that way. and still says, "Oh, but I love the Lakers. I still love the Lakers, and I've all, you know,
I always will."
But it's like Jeannie's my sister, and it's like, you know, dude, what are you doing? Like, you're that's all the Frank Vogel press conference was. Oh my god, did you hear about Magic?
Yeah.
It's like, we're here to introduce our coach. Like, thanks. Like, the Lakers are a total shit show, and it's getting beyond embarrassing. Like, if so help me God, if they strike out on, like, free agents in the summertime, I'm going to be mad.
I mean, kind of based on what's been going on the last, like, couple months, would you be surprised, though?
No. Like, I don't know what they can flip that number four pick for. I mean, I'll take anything except for Jimmy Butler because he's a fucking cancer. I don't want him.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm hoping Philly just, like, gives him the max. But Jesus Christ, like, the Lakers are the gift that keeps on re-gifting. Like, it's annoying, and I hate it. And I'm sure something else is going to drop next week, too. But, in happier news, the NBA released they're all NBA teams, which this actually matters, because I don't know if this works in football, I forget. But, like, certain guys are eligible for Supermax extensions because they made the all-NBA team.
Well, I know NFL has, like, performance-based.
Yeah, this is kind of
so
like, oh, yeah.
I want to say that matters.
Sure. Yeah, like, it's kind of huge.
Yeah.
So, like, your first NBA all-team is Giannis, obviously Harden, obviously Curry, Paul George, and Jokic. Duh. All second team, you have Joel Embiid, Durant, Dame Lillard, Kawhi, and Kyrie. And then third team, Westbrook, Blake Griffin, LeBron for some reason. I guess out of respect. Rudy Gobert, who's now Supermax eligible because he's also in the running for Defensive Player of the Year. And then Kemba. Which, Kemba Walker is the huge one because he's also he's eligible for a 200. Charlotte Hornets can offer him 5 years, 221.
Well, and
any other team can offer him like 141.
Well, and this ends like LeBron's 11-year streak.
Yeah,
first team. Sorry,
he made third. He made third. He didn't drop out.
Yeah.
But with, like, Kemba is like the sleeping giant of, like, free agency, because if he doesn't stay with Toronto, then everyone's going to want him because he's, like, a pretty good point guard. Or, like, the Knicks are allegedly looking at him if they don't get Kyrie, who could be going to the Lakers, I guess.
Yeah.
But if he, I don't know how he turned, if the Hornets don't offer him that Supermax, he'll leave. But if they offer him, like, you'd take 5 years, 221.
I would take 5 years and $1 million at this point.
Yeah, I know, right? But
yeah, 221 sounds
like
good.
Dame Lillard's going to be signing I think it's 4 years, 191 Supermax extension, and then Gobert's in that range too. But
yeah, should have stuck to basketball.
Well, a lot of people. It's funny. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, that kind of sucks because, like, the media are the ones that vote on it. It's like, it's kind of crazy that you have, like, someone's future, like, have that much power for someone's future. Because, like, Klay didn't make any of the all teams, which he should have. And that would have made him eligible for Supermax of the Warriors this summer. He can still get paid a lot, but, like, it would have been a lot more.
Yeah. I can see that, though.
But I don't know. There's no better way to do it.
Yeah.
Unless you take out the performance incentives.
Yeah. That's
it's like, what do you do? You can't really solve it. But. Yeah. And lastly, I just wanted to mention Kevin Durant, while he's taking his sick days before he leaves the Warriors, got into it with Chris Broussard. Well, I think Chris Broussard said something like KD is, like, privately upset the Warriors are doing this well because this diminishes his value. Now he's irrelevant, and KD's like, why would this make me upset? We're going to win.
Yeah.
And then it's just been a whole thing where, like, Chris Broussard's like, you know what? I could show you text messages. We text, but I'm not going to do that. Like, that's one of my favorite things about the NBA. It's the very petty shit that happens. It's delightful.
Well, you can say that, too, about, like, any sport.
No, but NBA especially, because they're more out there than, like, the NFL.
That's true.
Like, you don't really get, like, social media stuff at the NBA. Baseball, no one knows who any of these fucking people are, for the most part. And hockey's hockey.
Yeah.
Which I should...
Where they settle their differences on the ice.
They don't even do that anymore.
They should.
I should mention, I guess, the St. Louis Blues and the Boston Bruins, checking my notes, have made the Stanley Cup Finals, and... Canyon High School and Santa Clarita's own Kevin Miller is a member of the Boston Bruins, so I hope he loses twice for going to Canyon and for playing for the Boston Bruins. But seriously, congratulations.
Yeah. You know, good for him, but...
Yeah.
Let's hope he loses.
Yeah, no, right. Let's go St. Louis Blues. You deserve it.
Yeah.
They haven't been to a cup since... I think they said it was like 1959 or something like that. Like, a very long time ago.
Let's go with that, because then it sounds better that way.
Sounds better.
Yeah.
All right, moving on from that. I think next week we'll be able to preview the NBA Finals, and I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to clear out, let the birthday boy talk about Detective Pikachu, because I haven't seen it, and he has.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife and my older son and I went and saw it last Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Saturday? Saw it last weekend. And, you know, surprisingly, it was actually good.
Yeah?
We actually really enjoyed it.
Okay.
So, you know, it starts off and everything as any great thriller movie.
Sure.
Where, you know, the main star...
Pikachu?
No, Jaden... I forget his last...
It's okay.
Justin Smith?
Justice Smith?
Yeah, there we go. You know, gets news that his father is working on a case and
mm-hmm.
goes missing or, dies. Spoiler alert.
Well, don't spoil.
Well, it's... As the movie goes on, you find out that there's more to it.
Sure. I mean, there's always more to it, but yeah. Go on.
Doesn't end up dying. But anyway, you know, he has to go to the main city and everything and kind of collect his stuff, and that's where he runs into Pikachu and everything kind of... You know, unfolds at that point, and you know it's got a fun story. It's got you know, obviously all the Pokemon characters in there. My son really enjoyed it because he sits there and points out like Pikachu's obviously his favorite.
Well, yeah,
but he's you know pointing out all the different Pokemon and
oh, Lickitung, Cubone.
Yeah, you know, when we grew up with the old like the first game with Red and Blue version.
Yeah.
You know, the old school Kanto ones where you either chose Bulbasaur, Charmander, or Squirtle. And
sure.
Obviously, Squirtle was the best one.
Well, yeah, that's the easiest track to win.
Well, yeah, but...
Also, Happy National Turtle Day.
That's right. Good segue there.
Good try.
But, you know, it's got all the... You know, it's a fun, you know, fun kids movie. And afterwards, my son Zach is running around. And he wants to go play his Pokemon Go game and...
Mm-hmm.
But he wants to play it in real life, so we went and to Hobby Lobby and got the little styrofoam balls and we painted little Pokeballs and
cute.
Everything, so you could throw them around.
But good movie,
yeah. I definitely suggest like taking your kids to it. It's a fun movie. It's only I think an hour and 40 minutes.
That's fair.
So I mean, kind of like a longer kids movie, but you know it's fun and. You know, any Pokemon fan will enjoy it because it's got, you know, all the Pokemon, all your favorite Pokemon in there. And,
okay.
You know, Ryan Reynolds is just a delight.
Well, he always is.
Yeah.
All right. I can't wait to Redbox Detective Pikachu because I just...
Yeah, my son's already counting down the days to where we can buy it on iTunes.
Probably August.
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be his birthday.
And then my wife and I, last weekend, we got to see John Wick 3.
I know, I want to see that so bad.
Yeah, you do. Oh my god, like this is, there's going to be a lot of Keanu Reeves in this segment, because we have Toy Story 4 to talk about in a minute, but...
Well, and that they're going to release John Wick 4 too.
That's right there, 2021 baby, John Wick 4.
Yeah.
Which, you know, where it leaves off, I won't ruin it, but holy mackerel. But I was very, very happy with John Wick 3. It was a lot of fun.
Okay.
Like, Halle Berry was a great addition. Sir Bronn of Blackwater's in it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You don't watch Billions, but Asia Kate Dillon, who plays Taylor Mason on Billions, is the bad guy. And they're great.
Okay.
I mean, Ian McShane's the best. You know? The action is great. I mean, a lot of people are bitching, oh, it's too much, like, throwing him into glass and stuff. I was like, who cares? Like, it's fun.
It doesn't matter.
He fights Boban from the Sixers in the very beginning, and it's amazing. Like, Angelica Houston shows up for a couple scenes, and she's very much upstairs cocaine in it the entire time. I don't know if you read her Vulture interview, but she was talking about how when she was dating Jack Nicholson, he had upstairs cocaine and downstairs cocaine. See, downstairs cocaine was the ghost. Upstairs cocaine was the good stuff. So she's all upstairs.
There's a preference.
Well, yeah. If you ever have a chance to read it, it's on Vulture. It's amazing.
Okay.
I'm a sucker for like old school actors or whole Hollywood figures doing tell all interviews.
Yeah.
They're the best.
Well, yeah, because
they give zero fucks and it's great. I mean, some of it's a little like, ooh. Like, you just feel like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
But, because she defends some people she shouldn't defend. But, you know. Anyway, John Wick 3 is amazing. I was worried that, you know, after you get to 3, it's downhill. But nope.
Yeah, I mean.
Rafi shows up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's an assassin.
Oh, God, no, I really need to see it.
I know. Yeah, like, it's everything I wanted it to be, and I'm really hoping that with 4 they go out. Like, I don't even know if it'll be the last one, but if it is, you know, I hope they go out with a bang. Because they're 3-0 so far. And it's a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Like, Keanu's in peak form, and he's also going to be in Toy Story 4, which the trailer dropped for that this week.
Yeah, they're
show final? The final one.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it comes out next month. Where they show off Keanu's character. He's a toy called Duke Kaboom. He's a Canadian stuntman.
Canadian,
He's like Canadian Evil Knievel.
There we go, thank you.
But Keanu's totally dialed in. He knows exactly what movie he's in. He's great.
Yeah.
I really can't wait for Toy Story 4.
I know. I, you know, watched that trailer, too, and it's just the inner kid gets excited.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, ah, Key and Peele, Keanu Reeves, Bo Peep is back.
I know. I can't wait to kind of hear how that, how she, like, kind of disappeared and
well, she got, they say she got, like, you know, they got given away, and she probably just went from place to place, and she ends up in that thrift shop with all those creepy ass dummies and stuff.
Slappy.
There yep, we go. Slappy from Goosebumps is in it.
That's the main reason why Zach, my son, wants to see it.
Really?
Yeah, because he's all in the Goosebumps right now, and Slappy is his favorite character.
Nice. Let's see. Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood dropped at the Cannes Film Festival this week, that as well fun. As in a trailer. That looks so fun. And I've heard it's really good.
Well, and it's good to see, like, fun Brad Pitt.
Again. Well, it's good to see fun Leo.
Oh, yeah.
You rarely get fun Leo.
Yeah.
I mean, my God. Like, fun Leo is a rarity.
Yeah, but we saw fun Leo.
You get fun Brad Pitt a lot, actually.
I don't remember seeing fun Brad Pitt in a while.
Like, so. You know, Moneyball, he's in Deadpool 2 for like a second.
Yeah.
He's done King of the Hill.
Well, yeah.
The Ocean's movies.
Okay, but we haven't seen like a fun Brad Pitt movie since, what was that?
What, 12 Years a Slave?
No. I didn't see that one. the one where he was like the trainer or something like that.
What?
I'm seeing the trailer in my head right
now. What happens in it? Help me out here.
Where he's got like the short shorts. He's kind of like doing this like dance.
Oh, move. Burn After Reading.
There we go.
That was a long time ago. That was even before Moneyball.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the last time I remember seeing like a fun Brad Pitt.
Megamind.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that movie. Well then,
but no, but I mean, Brad Pitt like does other stuff too. But like, Leo rarely works. But when he does, it's usually like, you know, more serious because he has something to prove. But like, you don't get fun Leo very often. It's great.
Yeah.
Pacino looks like he's locked in this one. The whole '60s vibe looks great.
Yeah, and it's fun to see that they have, what's it, Margot Robbie,
Sharon Tate. Margot Robbie's
character, and then they showed,
well, she's Sharon Tate.
Yeah, and then they showed, why can't I remember?
Charlie Manson?
Thank you.
Yeah, Dewey Crow from Justified as Charlie Manson, which, yes! If you ever watched Justified, Dewey Crow's the best. Like, that's a perfect Charles Manson. The late Luke Perry's in it as well. Timothy Oliphant, who's on Justified, is also in it.
Yeah.
Like I said, Pacino, a bunch of people show up, but it looks fun. And the reviews have been very positive. And yeah. It's like his happiest movie in a long time, which I'm like, ooh, okay.
Yeah, there we go.
I know. I'm like completely locked in. And I heard like Brad Pitt, like, well, Leo's great too, but Brad Pitt like owns that movie.
Oh, good. And I kind of hinted towards that in the trailer and everything.
Mm-hmm. And less good trailer news, Terminator Dark Fate dropped today, because they keep trying to make Terminator happen.
Like, they should have just stopped after 2.
They should have, because there's no story. Yeah. It just, well, machines are going back in time again, and we have it, we've Arnold. Like, the last 5 minutes of T3 is like is actually pretty good, but like it is, last 5-10 minutes of T3 are great.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, not so much. Terminator Salvation, like, it sucked, and its biggest claim to fame is Christian Bale's rant.
Yep.
where he goes off on the lighting guy.
Yeah.
And less said about Terminator Genesis, the better. Just, it was, like, I'm glad Daenerys Targaryen got to get in her bad blockbuster movie early.
Yeah, get it out of the way.
Didn't taint her career.
Yeah.
It was woof. I don't know if you saw Terminator Salvation, was pretty bad. Or Terminator Genesis, but it was pretty bad.
Nope. And I wanted to see it just because of Daenerys, and now I'm kind of glad I didn't, because
it's okay. Garbage. It's fine. It's fine. This one doesn't look much better, although I like Mackenzie Davis and I like Linda Hamilton a lot. I'm glad she gets to look like a badass again, but I don't know why we have this, except for, like, people like Terminator. But...
I think they just...
They haven't done well since 2. Like, that's the thing. Like, people, they keep trying to bring it back, but it's like, no one cares. You can bring Arnold back all you want. No one cares.
Exactly. And especially in the trailer where they show him, like, living off in the woods and everything, like, all isolated.
And, like, this time they're like, oh, but James Cameron's a producer. It's like, is he a producer? Or is he just like, fine. I don't care. I don't need this.
I've got Avatar coming out. I'm good.
I've got so many Avatars and, you know, whatever.
So many Avatars in so little time.
Right. Exactly. Like, whatever. I'll hand wave whatever you want me to do.
Yeah.
Other trailer news. After the finale of Game of Thrones, which we will get to, they dropped the first trailer for Westworld Season 3. Now, I knew it was Westworld Season 3, but no one else did, because they're like, oh, what's Aaron Paul doing? And it's the future. But I'm like, but I'm a nerd and pay attention to this stuff. But I'm like, ooh, all right. All right, it looked cool. And the only person they show is that's in it, or from the actual show, is Dolores, which, yay. Like, I'm really glad. Aaron Paul's what that show needed, because, like, that show took itself way too seriously. I mean, I enjoy it, but, you know, it's sometimes, like, it needs to, you know, have more fun, and Aaron Paul's the kind of guy you need in a show like that, because everyone else has to be very, like, serious.
Yeah, bitch.
And, like, yeah, exactly. You need a little bit of that. Lastly, before we get to what's good and Thrones... Christopher Nolan's movie announced its title. It's called Tenet, T-E-N-E-T. So I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of duality, and because it's a palindrome.
Okay.
Just, you know, it's a guess. They announced the last two members of the cast, Kenneth Branagh, who not only directed Thor and a bunch of Cinderella and a bunch of other movies, but he's, you know, been in the Harry Potter movies. He's one of those, you'd know him.
Yeah.
And then kick-ass Aaron Taylor-Johnson's in it.
Okay.
Yeah. Joining the cast along with our new Batman, Robert Pattinson.
Ugh.
Well, John David Washington from Black Klansman, and Denzel's son and former running back of the Rams. Elizabeth Debicki, she's the gold girl in Guardians 2.
Oh, yeah.
She's also in Widows, and she's amazing in Widows. It's an international spy thriller. It's shooting in 7 different countries across the world. Because it's Nolan and he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Ludwig Göransson, who won an Oscar for scoring Black Panther, got signed on to do the score for this, which that's good for him.
Yeah.
Like, no one knows what it's about because it's a Nolan movie, but hey, it's a nice cast.
Yeah, I mean, it looks good on paper. Let's hope it delivers.
July 2020, baby. Because they're starting to shoot now, so.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get a trailer by probably December.
Yeah, I would say probably around, like, Star Wars.
No, well, whatever Warner's got it towards the end of the year, like, you'll get something for it.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be a teaser. Like, whatever's going to be coming out in IMAX towards the end of the year for Warner Brothers, you'll probably get, like, the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
All right, so real quick, round of what's good before we get to Game of Thrones and my interview with Akela Cooper. What's good?
So, it was an end of an era. I finally finished watching The Office last night.
Yay! You got through season 8 and season 9. God bless you.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to finish strong just because at this point I already 7 seasons into it. So.
That Nardog run was rough.
Yeah, that was really rough.
Like, they sent him away on a boat.
Yeah, and I...
Because he needed to do hangover movies.
Yeah. And came back and it just wasn't the same.
But the last 2 episodes are good.
Yeah,
I mean, told you. It's worth it just to get to the last 2.
Exactly. And, you know, the last episode, especially at the wedding with Michael Scott coming back.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert if anyone hasn't watched it yet.
No, stop it.
Hey, I'm just covering the bases here. But, you know, seeing him come back was a nice, like...
It was nice.
Gets you right in the feels.
And then, like, the Q&A they have about the documentary was great.
Yeah. If I had Jim as my husband, I would let him do anything to me. And I mean anything. Oh, that was great.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was nice, too, like, kind of going back to Jim, or staying on Jim. that, you know, Pam sits there and sells the house and like, yeah, let's move to Austin and let's go all in on your sports business.
Oh yeah. So, I forgot that's how it ends.
Yeah. So, you know, it was nice. Like,
mm-hmm.
The last episode, you know, it closes everything and it gets you like right in the feels.
Yup.
So it makes you feel
good. For you. I'm glad you finally, it took you long enough.
I know. You know, try and watch an episode or at least two episodes a night. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I've knocked it out in, 2 months?
Good for you. What's your next project?
My next project is I got to sit there and restart Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Woo!
Because when it first aired, I started watching it, but then it got added into crazy TV schedule, so I had to
make it's some so worth places. Your time.
And, yeah, I mean, that's what I'm going to probably start tomorrow. I don't know about tonight, but definitely
and
tomorrow.
You got to clear out The Good Place, Brockmire, and What We Do in the Shadows.
And
Barry.
I guess.
Which, that's my own shout out. Barry season finale was on Sunday after Thrones, which, my God, is that a weird dichotomy of TV. Like, yeah. Look, I knew Bill Hader was a great actor, and I knew that going into Barry.
Yeah.
But, like, him as a director, holy shit. Like, when you get there, when you get to it, like, especially the last 10 minutes of Barry.
Okay.
Like, I want to see what he does, like, a feature. Like,
I'm sure he's going to get one soon, based off of all his work.
He definitely should get the Emmy for directing this year, because, wow.
Yeah.
And Henry Winkler was great in the last episode. Steven Root finally deserves an Emmy nomination, finally. He's Stapler from Office Space.
Oh, okay.
A bunch of other things.
Yeah.
Dodgeball, King of the Hill. But he was great in that. NoHo Hank, which when you get to him, you'll love him.
Okay.
He's still on The Flash. He's like the bald guy. It wasn't like the very first season. Bald guy, he has the alopecia, so he has no eyebrows or any hair. Okay. I think he was like a seed. Like he like absorbed everyone else's powers or something like that.
Okay.
He's one of those guys, you'd recognize him if you saw him.
Okay. I'm trying to think back on that.
He's the shit on Barry. He's so great. Like he's a Chechen immigrant, but like he's like tries to be super American. And he's like just totally like weird. Like he's ordering a table. It's like, well, enough to support like 12 bricks of heroin. And he's like calling like IKEA. But anyway, like it was an intense experience. I was like blown away by the Barry finale. Another finale I want to shout out, Brockmire's finale.
Okay.
I was very impressed with season 3 because like the arc of Brockmire, like he's a, you know, total alcoholic, depraved lunatic, which you'll see in the first 5 minutes of the pilot.
Okay.
But, like, the whole season about him keeping it together after being in rehab. And this, like, one really tested... The finale tested his patience in a lot of ways. A lot of his triggers were hit. But it ends in a really nice place. I was like, Hank Azaria was fantastic. J.K. Simmons was great this season as Matt the Bat.
Nice.
And he's not... he was a former player turned announcer, but, you know, he's not called the Bat because he was good at hitting. But he's an adversary of Brock Myers. Bob Costas was great this season.
Okay.
He's a recurring character. So is Joe Buck.
That's Joe Buck.
Well, no, but Joe Buck's funny. Like, that's why I can't hate Joe Buck. I'm like, oh, he's really good on Brockmire.
Okay.
He's fantastic on Brockmire. Because he plays himself. Like, there's a recurring bit about, like, Brockmire getting kicked out of Ken Burns' PBS documentary about baseball. Because, like, Bob Costas tells him to, like, tell all, like, the dirty, horrible stories about players.
Yeah.
But anyway, the finale was really nice. It was really great. He adopts a tortoise in season 3, so that's for you.
All right, I'm sold then.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, anything else before we get to Thrones?
No, I think that's...
All right, next week I'll be talking about the What We Do in the Shadows finale, because that sadly ends next week.
Yeah,
that's so funny too. Every week. All right, now we're going to get to the series finale of Game of Thrones, titled The Iron Throne. Let's do this. Hold on. All right,
I'm ready.
All right, now joined by my wife, who has thoughts on the Game of Thrones series finale. I'll start off with you, Wes, since I don't live with you and I didn't get to hear your thoughts.
You don't live with me anymore?
No.
Oh. Kind of reflecting on like, the season and everything. I gotta sit here and like word it right, just because, you know, Game of Thrones this season. Here, you want the? Sure. Here. All right. This season it was kind of just meh. I mean, they had a couple good like scenes, but like overall, again, they're closing everything out, which I get, And especially with the finale, you know, they, you know, closed the door pretty much on everything, but...
Did they, though?
Yeah. It's just kind of... meh. As I texted you early in the week, I was just kind of like, all right.
And my one word review was, huh.
Yeah.
Well, it was just so, like, underwhelming and, like, anticlimactic for everything. Like, from start to finish. Like, I know when we'd watched the first two episodes, I was kind of like, all right, well, like, Chauncey kept defending, like, oh, they're setting things up. Like, I don't fucking need to watch you, like, drinking beer forever. Like,
how dare you? That was the best.
No, like, I need this to move along. And then, like, for... like, the Night King and stuff, and the White Walkers.
I'm with you on that.
You didn't even... That was so anticlimactic. You didn't have, like, any point to that besides, like, they were coming. Like, why were they coming? What were they doing?
Well, especially since they were building it up since, what, season
right.
5?
The pilot!
Well, I know, but, like, really amping it up since, like, season...
Right.
Season 5.
And then you just, like, yeah. didn't do anything with that. And then with, like, so after all of that, then just... Cersei is, like, the big bad after that. Like, okay.
And she gets a building dropped on her.
And even though then they show Tyrion in there, that's like, oh, if they moved to the left, they would have been okay.
Right, yeah, I know. Seriously. Like, you couldn't have just dodged a little bit.
Well, the thing that really ate me was when they're at the... they yada-yadded a lot of things. Even in the finale. Like, this whole season felt like one big yada-yada.
Yeah.
But even the finale, they really yada-yada'd. Like, when John killed... Oh, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen it, spoiler, get the hell out of here, punch out, do a fast-forward for, like, 10 minutes to my interview with Akela Cooper. Yeah. Anyway, when they yada-yada past John stabbing Daenerys, she dies, and then they don't show what happens after that.
And then, like, all right, when Dany dies, it's like, oh, she dies immediately. But, like, the episode before... Jamie got fucking stabbed, like, 4 times, and he's still, like, walking around for, like, half an hour.
She's so little. The knife probably went through her, like, paper.
Sure. Right.
Jamie's a Kingslayer.
I'm sure that's how anatomy
And he's
works.
Danish.
Yeah.
But no, like, they don't show, like, them, like, how does everyone know that John killed her? Like, everyone just knows, like, 3 weeks later?
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you would have think they would have had the scene where, like, Grey Worm finds him, and, like, how does Grey Worm not kill John immediately?
Right.
Exactly.
Like, everyone just kind of cool with it, and then we get into, well, who has the best story? It's like, Bran?
I know.
Like, Aaron Rodgers had a whole rant about that. Like, Bran? Brandon had the best fucking story.
He was so boring, like, the whole show.
And it's like, he knows he's gonna be king, really? So he's just gonna sit by while she roasts the place and not do anything to help anybody?
Well, and then, like, before he was like, oh, if I say what happens, it won't come true. Alright, well... If you also don't want to be king, then you probably should have said something.
Well, if it would have been one thing if Tyrion said, well, this is the best story that the Seven Realms will buy, all right.
I'm sure anyone there had a better story.
You know, but you know what I mean? Like, because they made a huge stink about how they wouldn't accept Dany as a ruler because she's a woman. So it's like, all right, if it's selling the rest of the realm on who's the leader,
well, I don't think
that's
they,
one thing.
They wouldn't have bought her as a ruler because she's a woman. Because,
well, no, but, I mean, remember the Varys had that conversation. It's like, well, you know, the Seven Realms, like, they have a they might have a problem with that.
Yeah.
You know, that, I'm not saying I agree, but I'm just saying, like, if Tyrion had said this is the story that the Seven Realms will accept, you know, fell out of the tower, became the Three-Eyed Raven, I'm all right. But he said this is the best story. Which, no, it's not. Sansa's story is better. Arya's story was better.
Even what's-his-face, he was, like, still breastfeeding when he was 10.
Robin Arryn.
Yeah.
Shouts to... I didn't realize it was Robert Arryn at first. I'm like, oh, yeah, he's like an adult now.
What a glow-up.
Yeah. But God bless that, like, giant's milk.
He had a better story. Like, anyone had a better story than Bran. Like, he's just been, like, chilling for, like, the past... What, like, 4 seasons?
Like, I think the only person that really won that episode was Bronn.
Yeah.
Because he got to be the master of coin for some reason. Even
though
he's totally skimming
random.
Off the top. I mean, I knew they were going to give him Highgarden, but I'm like, master of coin? Really? Okay.
I love his first act. It's like, yeah, we need to get the brothels built back up. Like, total, like, at least they stuck to that.
I do love the joke that Sam pitched democracy, like, nah.
Yeah.
That was funny.
I was laughing.
That
at
was
that.
Genuinely funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, Arya gets to sail off and go explore new worlds. All right. Sansa gets to be
sail the west, right?
Sail west. See what's past Westeros.
Yeah.
Sansa gets to be the Queen of the North, which that was fine. That was nice, but it's like
independent now.
Yeah, Jon just gets to live out in the with the free folk, yeah. giving no fucks, and gets to live with Ghost, who was missing one ear. How did that happen?
I mean, I think that's the nicest part of that whole finale.
I know, like, goddamn right, Jon pet Ghost.
Yeah. Like, gets reunited with Ghost. And
yeah, after not saying goodbye.
Yeah.
But, like, it was just all just, like, bleh.
Yeah, like they just felt like, oh, we're
yeah, you had 2 years really to film this.
I know. I really don't understand why they yada-yada, like, very important things. Because, like, there's a way you could have made the Bran reveal work, or the Bran ending work better if you'd done the work in the prior two seasons to make it that.
Well, yeah, I mean, this season just kind of seems like they're just like, all right, well, let's just kind of rush this off.
In an interview that George R. R. Martin, he had wanted it to be like 10 seasons, and then the producers or whatever they wanted 8 because they were like over it.
Well, then hire more of a writing staff to, you know, take your foot, you know, don't be so hands on.
Yeah,
right.
I read that interview too, like, where he feels like they just wanted to go off and do the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah,
so they rushed the 8, they pushed for the 8th season and kind of rushed through it.
Like, HBO should have made him take on a bigger staff. Then it's like, all right, you guys can like do the premiere, do the finale, and then you know have your staff fill in the middle.
Yeah,
and like, I mean, I did like, you know, the battle with the White Walkers and stuff, but I also felt like that could have been cut down a lot. Because like, oh right, I get it. Like, all right, you guys are fighting and stuff, but I also don't need to see like 2 hours of just like fighting.
Okay. But, I mean, that's what the people want. They want their huge battle, but
they okay, wish there but was I more mean, to
it. No, I know. I'm with you. I'm just saying, like, I understand the calculus.
Well, and
there.
Then it's just like, okay, so for all of that battle, I mean, same thing again. Like, you just ended. It just ended. Mm-hmm. Like, there was nothing.
Yeah,
like, I mean, they didn't
really
talk about it.
You can't really define, like, setting a plot, like, setting the plot like mm-hmm. that for
years.
Essentially, yeah, for years. Essentially, from the pilot all the way up until now, and define it by one episode. Right. Yes, it was an hour and a half.
Well, like, they didn't, like, clean things up with that. Like, everything, like, nothing, everything was just left undone. Like, there was no closure to that storyline at all, whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, like, they should have done Cersei first, because that would have probably been better, and then dealt with the White Walkers, because obviously they were a bigger thing.
And allegedly the ending in the books is like that Daenerys becomes the Queen of the Ashes, but still, like, they really needed more episodes and more time to do it. And like, a lot of the actors have said that too. Like, Daenerys, Emilia Clarke said that.
Yeah. Needed to hide some more drinks in some of the other episodes.
Like the water bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, you know, that's what people want to dunk on them for, and like, it's funny.
Yeah.
But like, you know, if you look closely, other shows do that, so I'm not going to get too pissy about
like,
that.
Yeah, like, I don't care about that. Like, yeah, care okay. about
I know, I just find it funny
it
that,
just,
like,
I know, I'm like,
you know, like, Starbucks got all that free publicity.
And it wasn't even a Starbucks cup.
I know.
Yeah.
They got 30... some odd million dollars in free advertising for just a regular styrofoam
like
cup of coffee.
Howard Schultz just got HBO a check.
I know.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if like Arrowhead or like Sparklets or whatever is getting like free publicity right now too because of that. It'd be a good time to buy some stock and water.
I know. Well, yeah, I know, right? I know. It just kind of felt it left me cold. I was like, oh, okay, all right, is this over?
Right,
yeah.
You were just like huh. okay, like sure.
That's exactly what I said when it ended. I'm like, this is it?
Yeah. I think like a lot of people felt that way.
Yeah, like if I saw it in the movie theater, I'd go and ask for a refund
of my
ticket.
Ask for a refund. Like, I mean, look, the show is still great. It's still a monumental achievement, and no one can take that away from them, but I just really do feel like they ran out of gas and just didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
totally,
you definitely get
obviously.
That vibe. Yeah,
well, no, but sometimes...
definitely get that vibe.
Like, it's a matter of laziness towards incompetence, because, like, they're not incompetent. They just didn't want to keep...
They didn't want to put in the work, yeah.
Yeah, because they have other things they wanted to do, and they got tired of the story.
Well, but I mean, like, HBO should have stepped in and been like, all right, well...
Well, I think they just trusted... They trusted the process too much, you know? Because if the show's a hit, like, what are you going to do? Like, piss off your creators? It's one of those things.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, someone from HBO had to watch that and been like, oh, so...
But it's too late to do anything because you've already, like, sunk a whole bunch of money into it, too. Like, that's sort of the other problem is, once it's shot, like, you're kind of... Because you also got to get...
Well, I mean, like, weren't, like, scripts approved or whatever?
I don't think so. Like, I think they're at the point where it's like, no, they're total autonomy, like where Kurt Sutter got to at the end of Sons, where they should have given him more notes.
Yeah.
Like that, like the last season, I hated the last season of The Sons more than the last season of Thrones. Because, like, the last season of Sons didn't give me anything. Whereas this, at least, I got some good moments.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, nothing is ever going to be as bad as How I Met Your Mother.
We're not doing that. We're not doing that.
I
agree with you.
That makes me so mad.
I know. But, like, yeah, it just, you know, because that was incompetent. That was straight incompetence.
That was just some BS.
I know. And it's you know, like, it's not going to diminish anything, any of my time watching the show. Some people are like, oh, I wasted all my time for this. Like, it's not about that.
Yeah.
Because there's still all the moments and all the good seasons to, you can always go back to.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but then it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Being
hate it. It was fine.
It wasn't fine. It was just there.
It was just media. It was like, eh, all right.
It was subpar at best.
Okay. I'm just saying, like, it wasn't like How I Met Your Mother, where, like, I'll have a real problem, like, rewatching any of the show now.
I have a real problem just, like, hearing anyone say,
I know,
like,
you know what I mean? Like, I can't watch, like, Slapsgiving now, because I'm like, ah, oh, Jesus. Because then you're just like, God damn it, like, this is really, whereas, like, Game of Thrones, like, Hard Home's on, I'm like, fucking Hard Home, hell yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Or any of that, like, it's, like, still, oh, this is really cool.
Yeah, it's just...
Alright, well, let's pour out some wine for Thrones.
It was a tough pill to swallow.
yeah, you know, I'm still gonna watch the prequel. Like, I'm interested in what the Long Night ends up being.
I'll watch it. Yeah, I mean, again, it would be nice to see what if they can recover from.
Yeah, it takes 1,000 years before, so you know, it's all gravy. They can probably, and they have the. I trust Jane Goldman. She's running it. She co-wrote all the Kingsman movies.
Okay.
Well, that second one was kind of.
No, but I mean, she also co-wrote for X-Men First Class and Stardust.
Oh, I mean, I
like Sarah. She's Matthew Vaughn's partner. He directed all those.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know.
She has enough like credentials. Where I'm like, all right, I'll see what you do with the TV show.
Yeah. We'll see.
We'll give it a pilot.
Yeah. If not, I'll just sit on the couch reading a book while.
There you go. Like you do when I watch Billions.
There you go.
All right. Anything else before we go? Birthday boy.
Happy World Turtle Day.
You guys
save the turtles. As my voice cracks as I say it, great.
Are you sure you're not turning 13? You're 13. Not
possibly.
13 going on 30.
Hey, it's a great movie.
I'm sure next week we'll have some more NFL chatter. I'm sure we'll have the end of NBA final preview. I'm sure there'll be a trailer or two,
which always happens after we end.
I'm sure there'll be a Lakers shit show story next week because that's what my life is.
That's what the Lakers are.
That's what the Lakers are. Anyway, everyone else have a great Memorial Day.
Be safe out there.
Be safe out there, and stick around for my interview with Akela Cooper. I am joined here by Akela Cooper.
Wait, it's Akela.
Akela, damn it! It's okay, I'm leaving that in. This is who I am. Akela Cooper, I apologize.
Oh, no worries, it happens.
She's not only a Rams fan and a USC fan, but she's also written for The 100, American Horror Story, Luke Cage, and is currently writing The Nun 2. Akela, yeah. Nice to meet you finally.
Nice to meet you finally.
I know. I didn't even know you were a writer when I first saw you on Twitter. I just saw someone who also shared my feelings about the Rams.
Oh, yeah. Like that, like from September through January, that is what I would be primarily tweeting on Sundays. My just... absolute rage and disappointment in the team that my mother got me hooked on in high school.
I was a fan too. I found him when I was like 10 years old. Like if my parents had gone to like games in the 80s and stuff, like they were there for like the Dickerson run. They didn't really care about sports. So I just found him on that Super Bowl with the Titans and I was like 11 and then or 10. I never looked back.
Like I found out, like the story was that because my dad, as you know, was a Chiefs fan. So that was, I don't know how he missed me there. But, like, my mom was a fan of the Rams when they were in Los Angeles. And she can't tell me why. She was just like, I just like the Rams. And then they moved to St. Louis, and they got Kurt Warner. And I dare say, like, she just fell in love with Kurt Warner. And, like, he became her quarterback. So
yep, I don't blame her.
Oh yeah, no, she was all in at that point. And so, you know, Sundays in our house just became, it's like, if we could get the Rams game locally, that's what we would be doing. And yeah, I also think for me, because I think when they came to St. Louis, I was like 14, living in southeastern Missouri. And so we never got to go to games because St. Louis was so far from us.
Right.
But just, I hate to say it, it was possibly the mascot is what did it for me.
Hey, they know whatever works. I mean, sometimes it's like, oh, I really like the colors, and they just never left. Like, that's fine. Yeah. However you get there is great, as long as you enjoy the ride. And
oh, yeah.
With the Rams, you had to.
The Rams is like, the Ram is a cool animal.
And it is.
Yeah, it makes sense as, you know, your team mascot. So, yeah, that's pretty much what pulled me in. And then there was no going back. My mother taught me, it's like, never to be a fair weather fan.
Agreed.
That was foreboding in our household. So once you were in, you were in.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know, and it finally paid off after 15 years of being in the dark. It was just like, thank God there's like something.
Well, we did have that first Super Bowl with them in the Titans, which was an amazing Super Bowl.
Oh no, but I mean, like, after they lose the Pats, then they have that one fun Mark Bulger year, then it was just darkness.
Yes,
it was the long night of football teams.
Well, for me, a lot of that period was like, I was like intermittent. I was in college. So a lot of that was like, I need to study, and I would keep up with them like on the internet, the interwebs, as they were known at the time.
Sure.
And then like when I moved back to LA and finally had time, I was like, yep, Sundays, I would find a bar and just, you know, watch silently as they sucked.
Yep, that's basically what I did too. I just grumbled into like my phone, because that's when Twitter existed. Yep. I'm just like, all right, we're wasting Steven Jackson's prime. Thank God. Like, this is amazing.
Oh, Steven Jackson. Yes. I remember that. He was like one of the first Rams who actually got like ads. Like, he
got
endorsements, and he had the like one great commercial, and then he went to the Cardinals. It's like, okay.
Oh, the Falcons.
Oh, yeah, the Falcons.
He's their all-time leader in rushing yards, and they're like, you know what? You deserve a playoff run, but he got there, like, a little too late or too early.
Mm-hmm.
Like, same thing with Tony Gonzalez. Like, they both got to the Falcons too early for the playoff runs.
Oh, yeah.
Poor guy. And then he, like, went to the Pats for, like, a minute, but then they cut him, and I was like, oh, that's really sad.
And then
like,
he was done.
He deserved better. That guy was a monster.
Yes. And then we got Todd Gurley.
Well, yeah, with Todd Gurley, I'm conflicted because I love the guy. He's awesome. But, like, the knee thing, like, I knew that was a problem when they drafted him, but I ignored it because I'm like, whatever. Maybe he overcame it. Now it's looking like it's just coming back.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens this fall. But, yeah. I mean, now we also do. We have Cooper Kupp.
We've got Woods. Man, if only he was around for that Super Bowl, they probably would have won.
You think so? I have to give it to the Pats. Like, Belichick is a damn good coach. It's like,
oh, I know, but
basically it's like, we're just gonna run the clock out on this game. I'm tired.
Right, but like, McVay didn't adjust, and if they had that like one other dude that they could throw to when that mattered, like, maybe it would have been like, because all it would have taken was just like one touchdown and they would have won.
Yeah, it was just like, all right, so they know you're going to Gurley when he's in, and then CJ when he's in. It's like, oh, he's running it up the middle. It was kind of like watching the Fisher years again. It's like, are we back to this? No.
I know. It's like, look, I get it. The system works, but don't double down. Like, you have to adjust it mid-game, man.
Yeah, do something.
I know, and I'm like, I know they're going to be good this year, but then I'm like, well, what if they go back to being 7-9? I'm like,
Oh, I mean, I hope they, you know, don't, because they have a brand new shiny stadium that they've got to fill.
I know. And
in LA, you can't do that at 7-9.
I know. Yeah. You don't want that 7-9, especially if they pay Goff, whatever it is you think the market will end up being.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about him yet. Like, I'm still on the fence.
Yeah.
All right, anyway.
Yeah, if you've read my Twitter feed, you know I had feelings about that. I thought we should have gotten Wentz, but we have Goff, and
it was you're one of my favorite follows when it's football season. Well, in general, but like football season, I'm like, all right, this person's awesome. Like, she gets it.
It's just rage and sadness. But now it's for the last 2 years, though, it has been joy. And I will give McVay this. Like, he turned that team around. In 2 years, they went to the Super Bowl. So really, you can't blame.
Exactly, and like, your SC tweets made me laugh too, because I'm a UCLA guy, long suffering UCLA fan.
Oh Jesus!
I know. I'm sorry.
Nothing but sadness for us right now.
I know. Well, I'm just like, man, like, how far do they fall? I'm like, when I was in high school, it was all SC. Everyone was all Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush. And oof.
That's when I got to SC, like when I did the grad program for screenwriting. Like I came in on the tail end of that. And like I had come from like a small liberal arts college in northeastern Missouri. So it was like, you know, NCAA Division II. So there really wasn't football. I mean, there was, but there wasn't.
What school?
It's called Truman State University.
Okay. I've seen them once in a while on the ESPN ticker. I've heard of them.
Yeah. So... this was my first, like, ooh, NCAA Division I football, like a real football team. And then, you know, the whole Pete Carroll thing and Reggie Bush and sadness.
He left right before the wagons came calling.
Pretty much. And it was a weird thing because, like, Pete Carroll's like, I'll never go back to the pros. Because, you know, a lot of those coaches have more power at the college level than they would. Mm-hmm. You know, it's why Nick Saban has never left. But then he was just like, yep, I'm out.
So that's weird. Oh, that's why. There's an investigation coming. Well done, Pete.
Yeah.
You had to go to Seattle, which really burned me. I'm like, you have to go to this team?
Yeah.
Or couldn't you go to, like, Jacksonville or something, man? Like, ugh.
I can't hang. It's like, Marshawn Lynch, if you've seen my Twitter feed, is, like, just wherever he is one of my favorite players and my favorite people.
I know. I enjoy Marshawn Lynch a great deal, even though he plays for played for the Seahawks for his prime.
Yeah.
I also just enjoyed how much contempt he had for Buffalo when he was there.
It was just funny because they're always like so reserved and, you know, on script and doing the talking points. And he was just like, I don't give a fuck. I don't want to be here.
I know. I appreciate that.
I don't want to talk to you. I'm here so they don't find me. It's great. Yep.
And I like that. I don't know if you ever watched The League, but his bit in the premiere when they're making fun of the Super Bowl was incredible.
Oh, no, I missed that.
Like, they're on the beach playing, like, touch football, and it's just like, why didn't you give it to me? Like, it's a whole thing about, like, the last drive.
I mean, that is a damn good question for Pete Carroll.
And one he'll never get over.
Oh, no, it's like, I was at the Super Bowl party with a bunch of friends, we had our Skittles ready, and then that happened, and it's like, why?
Well, I was in hell that entire Super Bowl, because I'm like, either the Patriots win another one, and I hate myself, or the Seahawks win their second in a row, and I hate myself.
Why were you even watching?
Well, because I was a PA at a magic show at the time, and like the person who was running the show also did that according to the halftime show. So I was like, oh, well, that's cool. Like, I'll see what she does. And also, I enjoyed Katy Perry. I don't remember a lick of the game. I remember nothing.
Yeah, I remember
nothing.
Basically all of us were like, all right, Seahawks are going to get a second ring. I was going to be happy for Marshawn Lynch. It's like, clearly they're on the 1 yard line. They're going to give him the ball. And then, nope.
So tell me about your time at SC Film School. I'm like really jealous of that because, you know, that's hallowed ground and very few people get to do it.
I was doing my undergrad at Truman State, and I had like a bunch of great professors who were like, you know, what would be great for you is grad school. And I'm like, why are you, you know, making me spend more money on higher education? They're like, no, like grad school is just what you want to be doing and you want to be a writer. And it's like, okay. So I didn't take grad school seriously. I'm sad to admit, like I only applied to like 4 schools, 2 creative writing and 2 screenwriting. And one was USC, and it just so happened that I got into USC. They're all, I can't get into it now because it's a lot, but like the other schools, so many shenanigans happened. Like University of Georgia Athens didn't get my application at all because even though I put down the right code, they sent the application to the wrong University of Georgia.
Oh.
Yeah, it was like all 3 of them had like some weird thing that went wrong with the application except for USC, and that was the one I got into. And so my parents and I packed up a U-Haul and drove out here from Hayti, Missouri, and I did 2 years. And it was honestly, for me, it was great because, again, kid from a very small town in southeastern Missouri. I had no family out here. I had no friends out here. I had no connections to the entertainment industry. I loved movies growing up, and I bought a couple of like how to write a script, you know, book that you get at Barnes and Nobles. And I, you know, wrote a bunch of shitty scripts on my typewriter in high school. Sorry. But really had no idea how to properly write a movie. Mm-hmm. And going to USC, I had a lot of great professors. It was like, okay, this is how you do it. And I learned a lot, and I learned how to, you know, like craft a script. And so wrote probably, looking back now, okay scripts, I would say. But you got to start somewhere. And while I was there, like, I also really did like television. Like, I grew up watching Star Trek The Next Generation and Star Trek Deep Space Nine, X-Files, Simpsons, Married with Children, like stuff like that. But I never really paid attention to the credits. So I didn't fully understand how television worked. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I got to USC and they had a nascent television program. And thanks to Pam Douglas, who kept pushing for this. She was one of my professors. She taught a pilot writing class. Like, she helped build what is now like a great TV track at USC, which they didn't really have before. Like, when I was there, it was like you take a couple of classes and call it a day, and your thesis was a feature film. And now students can write a pilot as their thesis. So yay. But it was through like a bunch of spec writing classes that I realized that like television was a career option. And it was explained to me, it's like you get a salary every week and you write an episode and then you see it produced in a couple of weeks to a couple of months, not necessarily, you know, toiling away by yourself for years in the feature world. And I was like, why don't more people do this then? Like, but at the time, it was, we were just kind of coming off of like the first peak TV with The Sopranos and Sex and the City.
Okay.
So TV was still kind of looked down on.
Right.
And I think Battlestar Galactica was like about to reach its prime. And I love science fiction, and that's what I wanted to do. But everyone was like, you know, you need to, you know, CBS procedurals or NBC procedurals. That's where the work is, and that's where the money is. And, like, if you keep writing sci-fi specs, you're going to pigeonhole yourself. And I'm like, you don't understand. I don't care. This is what I want to be working.
All you
want to
be in.
Sorry?
So that's the hole you want to be in.
Pretty much. It's like, I am digging this hole. I'm going to get comfortable. Just leave me be. And so while I was in my final semester at USC, the NAACP partnered with CBS and USC. And I believe eventually they did partner to do this with UCLA as well. But they sponsored a student of color. And I was the guinea pig. I was the first recipient of this. And I also got a scholarship and I got to intern for the NAACP's film division, which was cool. Like, I got to take my parents to the Image Awards that year. Oh yeah. And, you know, got some money that helped me, like, start paying off my student loans. But the boon to that really was getting into the CBS Writers Fellowship. And there I actually got, like, a front row seat to how the television business works from people who were working in television. We had a couple of mentors, like, two executive mentors, and Carol Kirshner, who ran the program, who is amazing. She's also on Twitter, at Carol Kirshner. You should give her a follow. If you're into, you know, TV at all. She runs seminars occasionally, and she also co-runs the WGA Showrunners Training Program with Jeff Melvoin. So,
okay, I've seen that. I've seen people, like, retweet that and stuff.
Oh, yeah, no, Carol is amazing, and she's been in this business for over 30 years. She knows her shit, and she helped me a lot. And the mentor that she set me up with was Lee Redman, who was a development exec at CBS at the time, and she developed this little show called Jericho.
Yes.
And basically, Lee helped me write, like, my first really good TV spec, which was Nip Tuck. That helped me.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This goes way back. So she also helped me get my first agent before, you know, all of this happened when we needed agents. Mm-hmm. And Lee helped me get my first job. Like, she put in a good word for me with the producers at Jericho. And, you know, I was someone from that area in the Midwest. And so I got a call one day, like, I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks after graduating from USC. And they told me, you know, Lee highly recommends you. We've read your samples. Would you like to be our research assistant for this CBS show? And I was like, hell yeah, I do. And so, like, I had a job on a TV show. And it was great because it was one of the few shows that actually shot in L.A. We were in Van Nuys, and our writer's room was there. The stages were there, and post was there. So I got a 360-degree view of how television worked for my first job. And so when I wasn't in the writer's room learning how that worked, I was on set watching everybody do their jobs. And then when they weren't filming and I wasn't needed in the writer's room, I would go hang out with the editors in post and see what they were doing.
That's very smart, because most people don't do that.
No, it's like, what do you do? What do you do? I want to learn.
Exactly. No, that's awesome. Good on you. Were you around when like all the Don't Cancel Jericho stuff was happening?
I was. I wasn't. I think I was on Facebook at the time. I don't think I was on Twitter yet. But yeah, I saw the Nuts campaign.
Well, like, didn't they send stuff in? Like, they were like the famous one, right? Like, people were just sending shit into like Don't Cancel Jericho.
They were sending in nuts.
There we go. That's okay.
They were sending in bags and barrels of nuts to CBS. Which, fun story, one of my good friends worked on Big Brother at the time. And so she would text me. She's like, hey, we just got a bunch of barrel of nuts. Because like CBS had to do something with all of these nuts.
Sure.
And so they used them as a challenge in like one episode of Big Brother.
Well, that's smart.
Yeah.
So they didn't go to waste.
It was Jericho, and then it got canceled, and then they did the Nuts campaign, and they brought it back. Mm-hmm. But they brought it back for, like, only 7 episodes, so they didn't have money to bring back everybody. And so I went from there, and, you know, like, the people that I met, and, like, one of the things about this business is, like, a lot of times it is who you know and who can recommend you. And so Carol Kirshner recommended me to one of the, I think she was at the time the co-EP of Dexter. And I moved over to being the writer's assistant on Dexter season 2.
Great season.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a lot of fun just watching them in the room, like, break, you know, what was essentially my first serialized show. Then the writer's strike happened and no one was working. And I worked with, like, my friend, you know, threw me some work in reality TV. So I also have education there in reality TV post. And then ended up doing the Warner Brothers Writers Workshop. And,
okay. I've heard a lot about that.
Oh, yeah. At the time, like, not to knock CBS, but at the time, Warner Brothers was the gold standard because.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was only them and NBC were paying for writers to be on staff. So there was more incentive for shows to hire untested writers. And through that, I got my first staff writing job, which was on ABC's reboot of the V miniseries.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Those are people.
Yep. And so... did the first season of that and then had a regime change. So showrunners changed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times new showrunners want their people. And so I was, you know, not asked back, as we say, which is the polite way to say I was fired. So basically, again, like, didn't work for a little while, worked in reality TV. And then I got on Grimm season 1. And that's what, you know, kicked off, the career that I have to this day.
Awesome. And so what did you get after Grimm?
Grimm, I did 2 seasons of Grimm, and then I went to The 100.
Okay, there we go. That's where I want to get into, because, like, my wife introduced me to The 100, because I wasn't a huge CW person, but then, like, once the Arrowverse started, that's when I kind of crept into the CW realm. And she showed me, I'm like, okay, this is actually pretty neat. How long were you on The 100 for?
I did The 100 for 2 seasons. So I did season 1 of The 100, and then we didn't know if it was coming back. And so, again, someone that I met on Grimm, Richard Haddam, who also does a lot of work in genre, had been hired to co-showrun the 2nd season of Witches of East End, and he recommended me to the showrunner, creator, and I met with Maggie Friedman, and she liked me, she liked my writing, and so I was there for like half a season. And then what happens is you're in what's, you know, called first position. So for The 100, I was in first position because it hadn't officially been canceled, which means I could take a job in second position, but if The 100 came back, I would have to go back to that show. And turns out that's exactly what happened. CW ended up bringing it back. And so halfway through season two of Witches of Eastend, I had to say goodbye to everybody who I love to this day. Like we literally just had drinks like a couple of days ago, and then went back to the 100 season two and did that. And then after that ended up getting an opportunity that I couldn't turn down, which was Luke Cage
on. Yeah. Okay. No, I dug Luke Cage a lot, like especially the Mahershala run. That was pretty cool.
Oh, Luke, yeah, that was it was bold. We were like, yeah, we're gonna kill Cottonmouth like halfway through. It's gonna be really cool. And then it turns out he goes on to win an Oscar. It's like, son of a bitch. but yeah, no, I actually he died in my episode. So
that oh was, wow, okay.
Yeah, nice. But Mahershala Ali, I will say this, is a lovely human being. He is super professional. He is super nice. If you ever get a chance to work with him, you will be lucky.
No, yeah, he seems like a good dude.
Oh yeah, it was being on set with him was a lot of fun, and Mike is a lot of fun. Like I was a fan of Theo Rossi from Sons of Anarchy.
Yes, so, yeah, he was a huge Sons person.
Oh yeah,
huge and, Sons and, person. I was glad to see Juice getting work.
Yes. No, like Theo is great and professional, as is Alfre Woodard, who that was like a lifelong goal.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, it was like the cast just all around was amazing.
What was the room like?
The room was a lot of fun. Cheo Coker was a first time showrunner, but he handled it wonderfully. And I actually ended up working with another writer who is a personal friend of mine, Charles Murray. He will hate me saying that, but Charles is awesome. And Charles has been like a friend and mentor to me for years, but it was also the first time for me where I was on a show where the writing staff was people of color predominantly.
Right.
And so it was great to kind of have that experience, and that shorthand culturally with people. And then also, you know, I will give credit to Marvel that they let us bring all of that to the show. Like Luke Cage is a very specific show, looks wise, mm-hmm. musically, the tone, the dialogue. They let us be black. And so thank you, Marvel.
How is that room different from like the CW? Cause CW is broadcast and, you know, Luke Cage is Netflix, obviously. I know they gotta be similar, but was there like, were the dynamics different? Cause the medium was different.
Not necessarily. I think the biggest thing for a lot of people to get used to coming from network to streaming is that there are no act breaks.
Yeah.
And so if that's how you're used to breaking story, then it's like, okay, but the cliffhanger is. And so mm-hmm. it's essentially we would break everything down by story. And so, you know, what is Luke's story? What are those scenes? What's Misty Knight's story? What are those scenes? And then just weave them and then talk them through and, you know, make sure we had essentially a story for that episode. And also the thing a lot of times for Netflix is, you know, they want you to keep watching. So
you need a cliffhanger, right?
Yeah. It's you need, you know, what is going to keep them, you know, when it's like, are you still watching? Yes. Yes, I am. and so that was different. It's like, oh yeah, no, it isn't just, you know, the mid-season finale is the cliffhanger and then come back in February. It's every episode you need to come back. And so that was a new skill set of like, okay, how do we end this on a cliffhanger? But overall, it's like, it's all just storytelling. It's just doing it in a different way.
Now with like the Marvel, cause I know this was like a common critique of like the Marvel Netflix shows. It was just like, it just felt like they had more episodes than they had story. Did you guys ever like run into that? Or was it just, you know, you guys did the best you could?
I will say yes. I mean, you know, when you initially for season one, it's like, all right, we're going to have Cottonmouth is going to be the primary villain for the first half. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to seed Diamondback through. That's what, you know, Theo was.
Sure.
And Diamondback comes in and he's the big bad for the back half of the season. We tried it. At some points, we did not succeed with Diamondback. Lesson learned. so then, yeah, season two, I would say, was a little bit harder because we introduced our season-long villain kind of in the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to do the thing. It's like, all right, he and Luke are going to fight, but no one can win. And so then, yeah, you are going through episodes. It's like, all right, how do we thread this so that it's still exciting, but you know, you can't have a conclusion until episode like 11 or 12. So yeah, for a more serialized show, it is a little bit harder when you can't, you know, just have an episode that is what we call like a one-off.
Right, like cuz that's one of the things everyone like brings up about those, like, well, why didn't they have like a like make it a little bit more procedural, like say Buffy, where there's like a baddie of the week and then you can do your serialized stuff later.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just so were you allowed to do that? Cuz I know like especially Jessica Jones, people brought that up a lot, like, why doesn't she just do a case in between like the Kilgrave stuff?
Honestly, and hopefully this will be the only time I say that, like, those were conversations above my pay grade.
No, I understand. I'm just curious how, like, the dynamic works. Because, like, you know, you see people yell about various shows on Twitter. It's like, well, it's not like they don't know that. It's just like a, you know.
Like, yes, not... Twitter fans, we are well aware.
Exactly.
Well aware of, you know, some of the issues. Yeah, it was, that was a Marvel Netflix decision.
Right. No, that's cool. No, but that's a great learning experience because, you know, it's a completely different type of writing room. And then was American Horror Story after that?
American Horror Story, like Witches of East End, was in between seasons. So, again, okay. With Netflix, like sometimes you can go a whole year or more in between seasons. And so you can't just sit on your hands and do nothing. So I was lucky that I got American Horror Story season 6 in the interim and I got to do the whole season. Which was a lot of fun, like being part of the Ryan Murphy universe.
I was going to ask about that. What's the Ryan Murphy theater troupe like?
It's a bunch of great people. It's like I got to work with Tim Minear, who I was a fan of from Wonder Falls.
Yeah.
I got to work with James Wong, who did X-Files and also the Final Destination movies. So that was a lot of fun. Met a lot of like younger writers. I will credit Ryan Murphy as like he is, I think, one of the few people who will promote from within.
Definitely.
And, yeah, you can start as, you know, one of the writers started as a PA season 1, and now she's co-EP, I believe. So that is a great environment to be in. And it was like, I'm not gonna fangirl out on these people because, you know, we're professionals. And
sure,
so
sure.
Professional. But it was cool. And it was like Ryan Murphy was like the white whale of showrunners because, at least for American Horror Story, he didn't get notes. And so FX trusted him to just produce the show that he wanted to produce, and they did it. And like I'd heard rumors about, you know, showrunners with that power, but I'd never like actually worked for one. And so that was fascinating.
Right. I think after Glee, that's where he stopped getting notes, because he's like, I've read a lot of interviews with him because I find his career very fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, okay, like, once Glee became like a supernova, then the notes are gone. Because Horror Story hit right after that. So it's like, no matter what he does, like whether it's like 9-1-1 or Scream Queens, like he's has a total autonomy.
Yeah. And it's fascinating. It's like, oh, because I like the first day, I was like, okay, so the process is, you know, we turn in our draft. Like, when do we get notes? And she's like, oh, we don't. It's like, oh, are you for real? And you're like, yeah, no, we don't get notes. It's like what the writers write is what is shot is what is aired.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, but it's also at that point it is all on you. It's like, nope, this is us. This is what we produced. We can't, you know, silently blame our studio executives.
Well, no, your season was a good season. I remember it was the apocalypse season, right?
My season was Roanoke.
Roanoke. Okay, but still, that was a solid one. You had Cuba that one, right?
Yep.
Okay, no, that was cool. The Roanoke was neat. I actually like the structure of that one.
Oh yeah, it's like that's kind of a little bit of my like reality TV background came in handy. It's like, oh yeah, I know how to do this.
That's neat. And then is that when you were at Hellfest?
Let me see. No, I think Hellfest came the next year. So I did American Horror Story season 6, and then Luke Cage season 2. And at that point, I think is when I got Hellfest. Like I had season 1 of Luke Cage, I actually decided I wanted to get back into writing features because I hadn't written one in like years, and I had two ideas that had been kicking around in my head. So that year, I was like, I'm just going to put them down on paper, so at least they're on paper. And I wrote two features, specs, and then I got a feature agent in addition to my TV agent. And he sent out the samples, and I had like a bunch of generals, but I also had like two really important generals, one of which happened to be Atomic Monster, James Wan's company.
Yeah. I love James Wan's career, man.
It is like having been there for the first Saw, like watching his trajectory has been something.
I know, because you don't really see people rise up that way anymore. It's usually like direct like a really cool indie or a smaller movie. You get Jurassic World. With him, it's like slow. Like what he did he directed the first Saw. Does Death? Damn it, I always forget the name of it. I know Dead Silence, but the one.
Oh yeah, Kevin Bacon. Dead Silence, which gets
Death Sentence. There we go.
Oh yeah, no, Dead Silence is like one of my favorite of like the early aughts.
Me too. I'm a huge Child's Play person, so I'm like a sucker for like the doll is the killer.
Oh yeah, so have you seen the new trailer?
I have. Are you kidding me? I made sure to wake up for it.
Oh yeah, it's like, hey Andy. It's like, oh man.
Like, oh, Mark Hamill, like that's perfect.
It is. It's kind of when they announced the casting, it's like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I just nodded and moved on. Like, yeah, no problem.
Yep.
No, and then he gets to do bigger stuff like Insidious hit, and all of a sudden he's doing Fast 7 and Aquaman. Like, that's awesome.
Totally. And so I met like two of his producers there, and we all hit it off. Because I will say, one of the things about being a person who genuinely likes horror and science fiction, it is rare in Hollywood that you find executives who genuinely like horror and science fiction. A lot of times you go on these meetings and they just kind of treat it like the bastard child they have to put up with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met like at Atomic Monster, and we all hit it off because we're all a bunch of like horror nerds.
Right.
So, yeah, the specs got my foot in a lot of doors, and I met Greg Plotkin, who eventually would become the director of Hellfest, on one of these generals, and he really liked my writing. And so when they needed a rewrite, he recommended me. And so for Hellfest, we did like a one day, might have been 2 days, I can't remember, but it might have been two days. It was like a small 2 day writer's room for what the rewrite of this movie was going to be, and then I was the writer who took point on that first rewrite, and then Blair took over after I left. And so, yeah, and I wasn't even expecting to get credit. Like, that was a total surprise.
Well, I appreciated that movie. Like, I sought it out because I live in Santa Clarita and like grew up going to Fright Fest as a kid at Magic Mountain. So, I'm like, all right, that hit a nerve. I'm like, that's awesome. Like, no one's done that yet.
And you would think it would have been done by now.
Yeah, especially because, like, in L.A., you have Knott's Scary Farm, Fright Fest, and then, Disneyland. Like, the mazes are a thing out here.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised no one had done that. I'm like, oh, wow, finally. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah. It was also great getting to write dialogue that eventually Tony Todd would say.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It is. It's just like, yay, I'm writing for my horror heroes.
And what came after Hellfest? Like, your experience working with that?
I can say it because it was announced. I got Megan with Atomic Monster, which is a killer doll movie that hopefully will be made. and that came because James Wan and another of his producers, Judson Scott, had just been kicking around an idea about, a version that they wanted to do of like a killer doll movie. And so Judson reached out to me and basically gave me like the one liner. I'm like, okay, I'll take a crack at this. And I wrote up like a short treatment and I pitched it to them and they liked my take. And so they hired me to write it. And then, I wrote like a longer treatment and we took that treatment around and Blumhouse eventually partnered with us. And so then I wrote the script. And we have a director, Gerard Johnstone, who did Housebound.
Okay.
Is attached to direct, and I think they're prepping that now. Fingers crossed. Production.
How's it been working with Blumhouse?
Oh, Blumhouse was also a lot of fun, and I discovered like another like horror fan that I've hit it off with, Ryan Turek, who is on Instagram, and like he's just like a genuine horror lover. And so yeah, we've been talking about doing something else together, like once I have time on my hands. It's wonderful to be busy, Chauncey.
No, I've heard. I follow like a kajillion writers on Twitter, and like that's the one thing that's in common. They just love being busy.
Yes. And so yeah, I would love to work with Blumhouse again. I have another movie with Atomic Monster I cannot talk about yet. And then, I did, I guess, enough good work with those guys that they put me up for The Nun 2 when I went in to meet on it. And the producers at New Line and Peter Safran, who is another producer, liked me and they hired me to write the sequel.
That's super awesome. Like, I saw that. I'm like, oh shit, I follow her. That's so good for her.
Yeah, it was nice. It was just like, yes, let's do this. Holy shit. And then it's like, you get it. And there's a period of like, yay, I'm going to do this. And then you actually have to sit down and write. It's like, oh, okay.
It's like, oh, there's deadlines now. Oh no.
Yes, there are. This is serious. It's also, it's like, for a writer, a lot of stuff is just like you work and then it's in the ether. You hope it gets made.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like, yeah, no, this will get made. People will see this.
Because there's a release date, right? Like that's kind of like the big driving of your deadline. Like they have a release date picked out already?
Tentatively. Like they haven't told me any of that. And there, it's not like anyone is rushing me. We all want
done.
We all want it done right. And like they have, everyone has been great. Like I can hit them up whenever I need to with questions. Can't say that. So yes.
No, I gotcha. No worries. I don't want to get you in trouble.
Yeah. No, whenever I have questions or anything, they are always open. If I just need to send them scenes and it's like, how is this in the right direction? Because obviously this is part of the Conjuring universe. There's a very specific tone they want to hit.
Yep.
They are super supportive.
No, that's got to be really neat to be able to dip into the Conjuring universe, because like that's been like quietly just so vast. Like it's kind of amazing how much they've gotten out of that.
It's a lot.
And then at what point? Because I saw you did two episodes of Avengers Assemble. How was that?
That was a lot of fun. My friend Jeff Thorne, who is also on Twitter, I think he's back now. He was like off of it for a while and we're like, where did you go, Bernadette? He was hired as the showrunner for that. And I think this was like 2 years ago or something. And it's essentially like a lot of freelance work. And so he threw me two episodes and, you know, you have a couple of days in the room with everyone. You talk through story, you assign episodes. And then what's nice about that was like, you just go home and write. So,
who's your favorite character to write for?
At all or on Avengers Assemble?
Just Avengers Assemble.
I would say Iron Man.
Sure.
It gave me a chance to like flex writing quips and comebacks.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, and so it's like not necessarily a skill that I use all the time in horror, but yeah, that was because, you know, if you've seen the show, it's like he's always cracking jokes.
Yep. No, yeah, my friend's 5-year-old like really liked Avengers Assemble, so he made sure I had to ask about that.
Okay, no, that was a lot of fun, but it was also having come from Luke Cage and then moved into the animation world when they were talking about it, it's like, all right, we've got the character's name escapes me, the shark, Tiger Shark, and there's an avalanche and there's a chateau. I'm like, whoa, where are you getting the money? Oh wait, this is a cartoon.
Was it weird having to like learn the animation format? Because I've taken an animation course and it's like, oh, it's a totally different kind of a totally different script format, because you got to like, do all the descriptions of what you're seeing too.
I was kind of lucky in that like I wrote it as a lot of them were just like written as scripts, and they basically just told me it's like you have to be specific, because sometimes the animators will see a line and if it's like just a general description, they'll just take that ball and run with it.
Okay.
So yeah, like that was like you have to be specific in what you were saying is happening and how many people and what weapons and stuff like that are involved. But a lot of it is like animation is just like television. So Jeff Thorne was the showrunner. I would turn in my draft to him. He would do his polish and then he would put it in whatever like actual format it needed to be in for the animators.
Okay, neat. And I forgot to ask you earlier, like when you were growing up, like what was like the movie or the movie that made you want to be a writer, or the thing you saw that made you want to be a writer?
Initially, I wanted to be an actor as a kid.
Okay.
And I would say what kicked that off was Beetlejuice.
Yep. Okay. That tracks.
Like, yeah, getting to the end of the movie and Lydia is like dancing in the air. Mm-hmm. I was like, ooh.
I want to do that.
That looks like fun. And then my father had to explain. It's like, she's probably hooked up to wires and whatnot. I'm like, I don't care. She's still in the air. Like, that looks like fun. But then I got more into writing. And I think like what absolutely solidified it for me as a child was watching Jurassic Park. Like,
okay. Being that, in the theater, that tracks for me too.
Oh yeah. Being in the theater and seeing that for the first time. I just remember once they showed the was it the Brachiosauruses, Brontosauruses?
Yeah, and it's like everyone else is just awestruck. They had the Spielberg face.
And that was the same thing in the theater, though. Like, it was dead silent. Everyone was like, oh my God, what we're looking at looks real.
Even now, like, I'll pop up a DVD or if it's on, like, Netflix or whatever, it still works.
Oh, yeah. And that
still works.
Like, two years before that, Terminator 2 came out. And when like, the T-1000, I remember when he, was part of the floor in the mental institution, and he came up out of the checkerboard floor, everyone was just like, whoa! Like, just the collective audience reaction to seeing that was like, oh yeah, whether it's acting or writing, I am going to work in movies.
Yeah, my dad, I didn't get to see it in theaters because I was a little too young for theaters, but we had the Laserdisc for it, and oh my God, did we do that all the time.
Yeah, no,
because it's a surround sound show off movie too. So it's like I love Terminator 2 so much.
I am happy that my parents I watched R-rated movies with them all the time.
Oh, me too. It was just like T2 specifically. It was just like it's still way too young to like just go to the theater. Because they tried it with Batman Returns I think earlier that year and it didn't go well. So it's like, all right, well, we're not ready for theater yet because loud noises.
I think I just loved movies so much. I just behave. I'm not saying you misbehave, but I was yes, give me my popcorn. I'm going to sit in my seat. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see what trailers come out. And we're going to start this. Yeah, I remember seeing Batman Returns and I became obsessed with Catwoman.
Who didn't?
Terminator 2, I remember we were in Atlanta visiting my uncle,
mm-hmm.
and we made sure, we got tickets because we were a movie-loving family, and we got there, a little bit late, and so the theater was dark, and we were, waiting for something to light up on screen so we could see where there were available seats, and then the Terminator's foot, the exoskeleton foot, comes down on the skull, and just, everybody jumped.
Yep.
I think I spilled some of my popcorn and then yay, we had lights and we could sit down, but it's just like, oh my goodness. Again, it's just like a visceral reaction, throughout the audience. I love that. And I want to be able to create that.
Well, you'll definitely get there with the Nun too. I mean, my God. I did want to ask you about cause the WGA strike has been very fascinating to me. Cause it's different from the 07 one in a lot of ways, but this one feels much bigger, obviously.
Well, this one isn't a strike.
Or not strike, I'm sorry, that's the wrong term, I apologize. It's the...
Oh, no, it's we walked away, basically.
Right.
And how I feel about it is the agencies walked away from us. We gave them a choice and they decided not to take it. I mean, Verve has agreed, so yay, go Verve. And hopefully others will also come back to the table like Verve did and, have a serious discussion about, refraining from packaging fees.
Right. That's the big sticking point. Cause everyone that's explained it to me, it just is can you explain what the packaging fees are just so for, people who aren't nerds like me?
Well, how I understand it, cause I had understood that packaging had been around for a while and mm-hmm. as one of the, writers who didn't follow it all that closely, it was basically, they package the show and then you don't have to pay a commission. It's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then you start someone actually started looking at the numbers and it's like, wait a second. And so it's basically if I, as a showrunner, were to create a show
mm-hmm.
and sell a show, my agency, let's just call them Agency X,
sure.
could then package it. They could pair one of their directors and one of their actors and sell it as a whole, which is not a bad thing to do. No one is opposed to packaging in and of itself. What we are opposed to are the fees that the studios then started, the agencies then started charging studios to package. And so it was basically the agencies were getting a back end that I wouldn't be even getting as a show creator.
Mm-hmm.
So for the longevity of the show, the agency would be making essentially more money than I would off of a show that I created, unless
right.
I got fired. Normally agencies would just get paid 10% commission. And then if I got fired, I don't get paid. They don't get paid. But with packaging fees, I get fired. Agency X is still making money off of my show when I am not.
Yeah, that's exactly the sticking point I've heard. Like, that sucks.
And it's also, they also started, you know, quietly making little production companies. And that's also kind of where the conflict of interest really came in. And I mean, the conflict of interest was kind of there with just the packaging fees, because they were no longer representing me as a 10% client, which meant they needed to fight for more money for me, so they get paid more money.
Mm-hmm.
With the packaging fees, they just go after the fees and I get whatever. And so, you know, your agency that's supposed to be fighting for you isn't fighting for you anymore, because they're going to make money regardless. And they're going to make actually more money probably off of the packaging fees than fighting for more money for you for their 10% commission. And then you get the tiny little production companies, which, yeah, they were never supposed to do that. I think, was it back in the 60s when Universal had to spin off MRA or MCA?
Yeah.
Into a separate company, because it was a straight conflict of interest. And so that's essentially the gist of what is happening.
I got gotcha.
There's a lot more math involved in.
No, I know. I'm not going to make you do math, because I wouldn't make me do math.
that's one of the things that also, like, I tweeted about. It's like, pissed me off. It's like, look, we're writers. Most of us never wanted to do math again in our lives. And here
that's
you are.
That's why you did this in the first place.
Making us do math. Fuck you guys.
I know. No, and with that too, because I know a lot of TV writers I follow are also like, hey, like, just because, like, we're in, like, super peak TV doesn't mean a lot of us are working, because you'll do, like one or two episodes on an 8-season thing, and then you're in the lurch again.
Yeah, and I, like, even with the last strike, I started noticing that, like, even though supposedly I was making more money, once they broke it down into weeks, I was actually making barely over what I made as a staff writer. So, yeah, like, wages have stagnated for a lot of us.
And also, like, because I noticed this, like, when the Lion King trailer dropped, a lot of people are like, hey, you know, like, the people that worked on the original one, because of the way animation wasn't mentioned in the original agreement, like, they're not getting anything for that. I was like, wow!
Yeah, no, they're
even
not.
Even though it's, like, 90% of their script, essentially. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Like, I don't know how close you are with it, but, like, do you see, like, it coming to a head soon, or?
No, I don't know, but I can see this dragging out.
Mm-hmm.
But what, you know, makes me happy to see is that, like, all of the WGA solidarity and the WGA staffing boosts.
That's been, like, nice to see.
Oh, yeah, like, if you would think at a certain point, and I think, you know, maybe this has something to do with Verve, who is predominantly literary, writers are getting jobs without agents.
Which that's huge.
Yeah, and it's like, at a certain point, you are just going to tip into, oh, I don't need an agent, so why would I go back?
Exactly. Like, I just would need a lawyer just to, like, break down the legalese of a contract, but I don't need you to agent for me.
Nope.
Which, that's cool. Like, I'm really kind of hoping they break the wheel on that. And speaking of break the wheel, as a writer, I follow you, and I share a lot of your thoughts on this season of Thrones, and mostly last season, because they started from the same place. How have you been feeling?
You know, one of the fantasy creatures that I grew up loving as a child were dragons.
Sure.
Excalibur, and then, like, all of those.
Dragonheart?
Like, yeah, Dragonheart in 95. Sean Connery.
Yep.
You know, that was my jam. Reign of Fire is one of my favorite.
Yeah! Movies. We don't talk about Reign of Fire enough.
It stars two Oscar winners now. That movie stars two Oscar winners. They clearly knew something.
They did, and I wish they would have had a little bit more money, because, like, the poster for that movie is amazing. Do you remember that? Where it's got, like, the Black Hawk helicopters and
yeah.
Then, like, I wanted that, but I get it. It wasn't a huge, like, budgeted movie, but it was still solid.
It was solid B movie, and there is nothing wrong with B movies. I grew up on
underrated McConaughey performance.
Oh yeah, like, John Wick is a B movie that spawned a B movie franchise.
And it's a delightful B-movie franchise. I saw three last night, and it was incredible.
It was! Oh my god, it was so good. So good.
I know!
The library scene? Yes.
I'm like, oh shit, Boban!
So, Game of Thrones. I was into it, like, season one finale when she came out of that fire and she had three baby dragons.
Yep.
I was like, yes, I want to see this. Someone has made a show for me. They have a TV budget for dragons. And I have enjoyed it. I would say that, like any show, there are really good episodes, and then sometimes they would be, you know, they would have episodes you might call filler. But we got to learn stuff about the characters. For this final season, I'm not thrilled. I really wish someone would have gone, like, maybe we need at least one more episode in the final season just for character.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we're taking the time that we did in previous seasons to, you know, they would have, like, those two-handers, as we call them, like, two characters talking. Yeah. And we got to know their personalities, and we got to know their point of view and their perspective on things. And, yeah, a lot of that now is like, oh, man, you know, spoiler alert, Miss Andai got her head cut off, and I'm holding her only possession, which is her slave collar, which... That was weird.
That's tough.
I'm like, I had to rewind. I'm like, is that her bracelet? Oh no, that is her slave neck collar. That is what the black woman kept. Okay.
Well, just a bunch of like character stuff. I'm like, man, like, because it goes back to the previous season too. Like since season 7 really is where they kind of messed up, because they had to, like, you know, even the odds and take away dragons and part of our army, but this to get there has been rough.
Yeah, and to me, I was like, yeah, like, watching, was it Viserion die? You were following my Twitter feed. That hurt. That hurt a lot. But then we got zombie dragon. It's like, woo, yay. I will be watching tomorrow. I will be watching the series finale Sunday. And I think overall, no matter what, like, we have to respect what Game of Thrones has done.
Oh, sure.
Television, like... It has elevated the game, and also, like, as writers, we all now have something to point to. I have something to point to as a showrunner. It's like, yeah, like Game of Thrones. Like, I don't think we have Game of Thrones money, but can we, you know, try to get there?
Right. This is the level of scope I'm looking at. Like, now now it's not so weird to be like, hey, it's a whole sprawling world with various kingdoms. Now it's like, hey, look at Thrones.
Yes. And then there's a lot of, you know, Netflix now has the Witcher series. So, like, everyone is now after their Game of Thrones. And hopefully, you know, we'll get another one. I don't think this is the end-all be-all. Like, come up with a lot of television. I remember Battlestar Galactica is like, oh, we'll never have, you know, like, another TV viewing experience collectively like this again. It's like, yeah, we will.
It'll just be a long time out. Like, maybe it's the Dark Tower series or Amazon or Lord of the Rings or whatever. But you will get something. It's just harder now.
Yes, you will. And it's like, yeah, the bar has been raised, and kudos to David Benioff and D.B. Weiss.
So you're not signing a petition?
No, I am not signing a petition.
It's like, that's so amazing. I know. I'm like, what is wrong with people? Like, I would pay to see these quote, incompetent writer or competent writers. I want to see their spec. Like, okay, show me what your version of Thrones is. I'm sure it's, like, so superior to what these guys have been doing for, you know, 8 years.
No, and that is a thing, like, as a creator, it's like, at some point we will have to talk about, like, fan culture and toxic fan culture, but it's like...
I'm leaving that on the bone for next time. That's a whole other place.
I respect storytellers. I remember, you know, decades ago when Silence of the Lambs, like, that author, when he did Hannibal, and, like, that book came out, and fans were super pissed because Clarice Starling was, like, eating brains with Hannibal Lecter. And, you know, I haven't read the book. I think they might have.
I read it in sixth grade, cover to cover. And that's what happens.
Okay. And so, like, fans were like, they felt betrayed.
Yeah.
And it's like, but this is the story that he wants to tell. So
yeah, it's like, well, what do you want? Like, do you want her to just go around the world, like, talking to Hannibal Lecter and solving crimes, or do you want it to advance in his own way?
And I mean, like, fans can, you can be disappointed, like, they're sure, but it's also, it's like, well, that's the story that he wanted to tell. So that's him. I don't know. But now it's like the people were like, no, we have the petition and we want to redo Star Wars and we want to redo Game of Thrones. It's like, no.
And yeah, first of all, then people are like, well, Benioff, like, wrote X-Men Origins Wolverine. Like, yeah, but he also wrote the script and the book for 25th Hour. And that automatically gets you points for life.
Yeah, and I mean, I am not opposed to Troy. I enjoyed
that. Oh, sure, and Troy was great, too.
Like, Troy was like, all right, this is one of those throwback epics. Cool.
Troy's a solid movie. And by the way, like, you're not what your previous work is. Like, no one would have saw, like, Noah Hawley getting, like, Fargo based on, My Generation show or whatever he had for ABC.
Oh, but yeah.
Look at him.
Yeah. And I will say this. It's like, I remember Aliens is my favorite movie of all time.
Sure.
I saw Alien 3 and I hated it. And then Alien Resurrection came out and I swore up and down I would never watch anything by Joss Whedon again. And then the Buffy TV show came out on the WB. It's like,
exactly.
Oh, okay. Like I was wrong.
Like, if the internet existed, James Cameron wouldn't have gotten Terminator after, like, Bull Piranha. Piranha.
Exactly.
Like, you know, it's like, everyone has to start somewhere. You don't roll out of bed and, you know, you make Jurassic Park or something. You gotta start somewhere.
And that was also, as much as I prided myself on being, you know, industry savvy, like, I subscribed to Entertainment Weekly and Premiere Magazine when that was a thing, and Fangoria, like, you still don't know what goes on behind the scenes. And
no,
like,
and it's
experiencing
like...
Experiencing that now, it's like, oh shit, yeah, no, people... Because there is a lot of stuff that we just cannot say.
Exactly. No, exactly.
We can't all be like, Constance Wu.
No, exactly. And it's like, you don't know the kind of battles, like, even if you write an episode, like, it's not, you don't roll out of the computer with that episode. There's rewrites and then there's...
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's meetings and it's like, it's a whole, that's why they say it's a collaborative process. You're not, like, by yourself, you know, doing it and that's it. Like...
Yeah. I mean, I've been part of a film process where I was a writer brought in to rewrite someone else for the producers and the directors. Like, the movies that I have done with Atomic Monster, like, the director, like, I had a great conversation with Gerard, and he's like, I'm going to take it now. And I'm like, I get that. That is how features especially work. And at some point, as a writer, it's out of your hands. And even at some point, as a director, it might just be out of your hands.
Yeah, you might not get final cut, and that's fine. That happens. Or... It's like, hey, this didn't, you know, I thought this was a good idea. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was. But, like, this is what it was. It's not like, you know.
It is rare that you have the power, like Christopher Nolan, to just make what you want to make.
Exactly. And look how he had to get there to do it, you know, following Memento and then Insomnia. And then someone took a chance on him for Batman and then off to the races.
Oh, yeah.
Like, people just don't appreciate, like, the process.
Yeah. Anymore. I don't regret watching Game of Thrones for these last couple years.
No.
A lot of fun. I will say the show has had issues with depictions of people of color. Like, I remember watching the series premiere with my friends, and then you cut to the Dothraki, and it's, you know, brown people having, I guess, an orgy in the middle of the street. Like, okay.
I mean, they gave you that one, the guy from Karth in season 2, but and then the pirate, but they don't really see them again, so it's kind of...
Oh, yeah, the pirate also, if I remember correctly, was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go into King's Landing and, like, rape the queen. So she's like, oh, shit.
I know.
Okay.
It's not perfect, but, like, you know, you know, nothing is, and, like, that show achieved a lot, and it also has its problems. That's why, you know, that's why it's going to be written about forever, because there's a lot to thought to chew on.
Oh, yeah. It will be interesting to see how people look back on this.
Yeah.
In, like 10 years. I think
there will be a reprisal.
The series will be stronger than the end of the series.
I do, too, because this seems like this is what they wanted to do in the first place. And if they probably had their druthers, they would have just, like, staffed more or something, because it just seemed like they were kind of out of gas on this story, which is fine. That happens, because you're in it for, like, 8 years. But, you know.
Oh, yeah. And it's also, they are making, as far as, like, a production goes, yeah, Game of Thrones is more like your films. They are shooting locations round the clock.
And different episodes different scenes from different episodes at a time.
Yeah. And so yeah,
like,
no, it is
hard.
That's going to take a toll. To them for seeing it through.
Exactly. And like, it's really guessing the finale is exactly where they want to go. So hopefully, like, you know, plotting aside, this is where they want to end it. And, you know, good for them. They can do their Star Wars trilogy. I'm sure that'll go well with on the internet. But, you know, like, you know, God
just
bless
anything
them. Like,
Star Wars at this point, it's like, I become the Homer Simpson, like, fence gif. Like, just back away.
Exactly. I know. And, like, good for them. Like, they've earned it. Like, they built a show that they fought to get the show made, and they made it basically the way they wanted to.
Yes. And I think, like, we're all going to go through this again, like, the next time George R. R. Martin releases the next book. Like,
he won't release a book. It seems like he wants to do anything but do those books.
You like, know, I hope for his fans' sake, he finishes it his way, and, you know, someone else doesn't have to take over, but...
Wouldn't the power move, though, just to be never write a book again? Just like, no, like, that way it's like, nope, the George R. R. Martin ending would have been better. Like, you just let it be the Chinese let it be the Chinese democracy of fantasy books.
It's like the Zack Snyder cut of
the Detox album.
Oh, like, my God, I'm going to have many angry fanboys in my mention soon.
I know. It's okay. I wanted to ask you one more question because you mentioned you were a Simpsons fan. And I have to ask anyone that's a Simpsons fan. Your favorite episode?
God, it's probably a tie between like the monorail and the Valentine episode where like you can pause at the exact point his heart breaks.
Stop it. That's my favorite episode. I love Lisa.
The Valentine's episode?
I watch it every year on Valentine's Day. It's amazing. The President's Day pageant is gold. Like, it's, everything is so damn funny from the first Monster Mash to the last Monster Mash. That is my favorite episode.
That one, and then I also do, like, the X-Files episode with Mr. Burns where they realize he's the alien. Yeah.
Just Homer talking about the M&Ms and spilling on Scully. It's incredible.
Yeah. Now that I'm sober, I don't bring you peace and love. I bring you pestilence and yada, yada like that.
Good morning, sunshine.
The earth says hello. Yeah.
That's so perfect. Like, both the company and Anderson were so game for that. I appreciate when, like, the guest stars are just game for stuff.
Oh, yeah. And those were always my favorite episodes of the X-Files were the goofy...
The Gilligan episodes?
Yes. Like, the funny ones.
Well, Nimoy 2 is underrated.
Clyde Bruckman's Last Repose, I think,
right. And like Nimoy in both the X Files and the Monorail, he's amazing.
Oh yeah.
God bless Leonard Nimoy. All right, thank you so much, Akella. I really appreciate talking to you. I can't wait to keep following you on Twitter. And good luck with The Nun too.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
The thank is all on the side of the laptop. I promise you.
Okay. Awesome. Have a good one.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.